It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Allison Sheridan of Nozilla Cast joins the crew to talk about Apple's blacklist. Is there such a thing? Apple's acquisition of PrimeSense, the creators of the Kinect. What might they be using it for? And why somebody bought a $977,000 Mac Pro. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 378, recorded November 26th, 2013. The Apple Blacklist. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK11. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers the Macintosh and Apple world in obsessive detail. Alex Lindsay is here. Very nice to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
Where have you come from to us?
Vegas and D.C. and New York.
Oh, practically local. Week.
Yeah.
Practically
yeah,
local.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here all week.
Nice to have you.
Yes.
He's here all week.
I'm back in L.A. next week.
Also with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
How's it going, Leo?
Good to have you. Andy Inatko from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Greetings.
And very special guest, Allison Sheridan from Nozilla Cast. Hi, Allison.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm very well. I think that pod feed is misspelled. I don't think there's a P after the D and in between the D and an F. I like the pod feed.
Uh-oh.
Feet.
We didn't
There's
do
too
a second spell check.
Quick, too many consonants.
Register that domain.
Pod feet. That's a little... Hi, Allison. Good to see you. I haven't seen you. I haven't been with you since... Well, been with you. That's not the right phrase. But I haven't... we haven't hung out. There you go. Since Australia a year ago.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah, definitely.
So today we talk about Apple news, and there's not, as usual, a whole lot of Apple news.
Do we say that, like, unless there's an Apple announcement a week away, every week is the week.
There's rumor, no news. It's like a World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft, it's run, fight. Run, fight. This is like rumor, announcement. Rumor. I mean,
and yet every week we show up. And yet,
we
every
show
week,
up every week.
These, our listeners show up, so...
Yeah, we got a good crowd here because it's the holiday week.
It is. It's busy.
And so everybody decided to spend Thanksgiving with us. They're all looking at me askance now. saying,
I think they heard there was going to be turkey, Leo.
That's me. I'm the turkey. Apple admits they did, in fact, buy PrimeSense, the company that did Kinect for Xbox 360, an Israeli company that specializes in... 3D sensor technology, I guess, for want of a better word. $360 million, according to sources. This was a story that was broken by an Israeli blog last summer, and then everybody denied it, and it got quiet. And then it came out again a couple of weeks ago, and finally it's confirmed now from Apple itself. Apple buys smaller technology companies from time to time, they said. We generally do not discuss our purpose or plans. We can PrimeSense says... We can confirm the deal with Apple. Further than this, we cannot comment.
So when this was a rumor last week, Leo, you guys talked a lot about the idea of using it for games and that kind of thing with the Apple TV and waving your arms and all this kind of stuff. But I had another thought. Is it possible what they're going towards is places where you can't do touch, like on a watch? So the targets are just going to be too darn small on a watch to do anything. What if that's where they're going to do gestures because you can't actually touch it? Go smaller, not bigger.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, technically, it might be challenging. The Kinect sensor is as big as a watch
right
now.
I thought they said they were making small chips.
But they could, in theory, make it. I'm sure they can do anything. That's an interesting idea. Yeah, because yeah, go ahead.
I do think that we're going to find it in a non-obvious place. I don't think they're going to use it the way that Microsoft uses Kinect. I mean, it's just another that we could fill like another episode of another show just talking about interesting ideas that comes from the iWatch. When I think about putting a gesture controller like that on the watch, what I worry about is, yeah, but you're also, your sleeve is going to occasionally be brushing over it. Sometimes you're going to be moving it across objects not intending to. So this
car goes by and it starts playing music for you.
There was also some interesting stuff from Mac Rumors and Jessica Lesson now about how the technology behind it can be used for more than just Kinect stuff, like 3D model recognition, indoor mapping, all sorts of digital input stuff on that side that Apple could use to help with their C3 technologies, mapping stuff with indoor mapping, just beyond recognizing people in motions, which is really interesting.
Just having a head count on the number of people inside a room would be very, very valuable.
I can also imagine that it might merely be an acquire in the sense that they just want these really smart Israeli engineers working on stuff for them. It sounds like they're doing a lot of different things. Kinect, the new Kinect in Xbox One does not use Prime Senses technology, and it's actually about 100,000 times better. You don't have to get way far away from it. It's got much, it's really impressive. It does very good face recognition. You walk in the room, it knows you're there, puts a little bubble over
your head.
It
knows who's there. It knows.
Yeah, up to six people it could recognize. Yeah. All of this the original Kinect did not do, but which is not to say that Prime Senses technology is not able to do it. It's just that Microsoft, probably sensing this was about to happen, decided to do their own in-house stuff.
And it'd be nice because Siri has made the microphone on Apple products so much more useful. It'd be nice if the iSight cameras were so much more useful, whether that is gaming or not, or just like Andy said, knowing more about us and our environment. There's a whole bunch of stuff you could do to make a smart camera system.
And one of the things, if you look at some of the augmented displays that we've seen so far, those are mostly based on the accelerometer and trying to figure that out. And you'll notice that there is some slippage. You know, so if you're moving around in augmented reality and you're kind of looking at stuff, there's a couple different ways of solving that. One is to do, track points that are in the scene, but having the Kinect type technology would allow you to probably, maybe not two cameras, but taking the technology that they have, allow you to lock that a little bit tighter so that things that look like they're stuck in the real world, augmented on you through your phone, could really stick to it. And those are some of the things I think that might be interesting as well.
They do so. I mean, really what they're doing is cameras that sense the world. So they, for instance, they sell a product through iRobot called Ava that is used for healthcare. This is really kind of a more sophisticated company than they do body metrics. Oh, wait a minute. I wonder, is that anything
sensors, Apple? It's a sensor play.
Apple might be interested in is a body metric. They do stuff for mobile with Qualcomm. The Capri sensor is very small. So really what they say is the idea is to give devices the gift of sight. Mm-hmm. And I could see lots of applications from Apple's point of view in the iPhone as well as a watch or a TV.
I really do think that the next wave, multi-touch was the big deal over the past 5 years. I think the next really big deal over the next 5 years is going to be context awareness. Just understanding that we're not going to have one static piece of software that the user now has to switch through to communicate to the device that, I'm in the car, now I'm inside.
Turn that down, thank you.
Grandma?
Hello? I'm here, Andy. I wanted to talk to you. So this is something called Viewphoria that gives it, it's an augmented reality. This is, we're looking through a tablet at stuff. So there you go.
And this is Prime.
This is Prime Sense.
Yeah, this is what I was talking about. So being able to lock everything truly to the environment and not have it slip, or not have it slip nearly as much.
I think to make your coffee table into the Game of Thrones opening theme would be great.
Well, also you think about when you look at a demo like this, imagine that you don't even have to look at that screen. Imagine that the computer just simply understands that you've got a pencil on your desk that you just happen to have. That by simply moving that pencil from one place to another, you're communicating something to the device about what you want to do.
Right.
Or just by turning on a lamp or moving a lamp or moving your keyboard closer to yourself, it understands that he's now in a creating mode. He's not in a watching mode right now. Right.
Well, and also imagine going to a Greek ruin or a Roman ruins and being able to see what it looked like through an iPad instead of what you're standing in.
That would be very cool.
That's nice, but is that worth putting another $8 component inside an already cost margin device?
It depends on how many options, how many places you could use it.
Yeah, see, I don't see Apple as this is just conjecture on my part. I don't see Apple as doing that sort of thing where they're going to put a new component into a device and then hope that it gets built out into the world and they get enough partners that they actually do it. I mean, we've seen Passbook is a great tool. And maybe we all kind of hope that by now it would be possible to just wave your iPhone at anything, at any retail outlet, and be using that as your wallet. And there's still plenty of places where you can use Passbook, but it's not. Square is a lot more popular than Passbook right now. I can easily see it being used as a way of making everyday objects inside your house or on your desktop into parts of a user interface, because there's all kinds of really cool ideas you can use with that. Imagine being able to simply pick up a pencil, any pencil you want, any pad of paper you want, and draw. And because this device can track the point of this device, and maybe even sense the movement, how tightly you're gripping this stylus, and how tightly you're doing it. Not only are you actually really drawing with real paints on real canvas, but you're also making a digital copy of it on your computer about 5 feet away. That's what I could see Apple doing.
Andy, that context aware thing needs to go both ways, though. Is I need to be contextually aware of where did that stuff go. You know, like if you start talking about watching TV right now, where you know there's a show you watch, but you can't figure out what channel it's on, what device it's on, which remote you're supposed to use. So if I can draw with a pencil and it can sense it, I also have to be contextually aware as a human, where did all that data go? Where did it end up? Is that one in Dropbox or SkyDrive or, you know, all those things are still getting pretty mixed up in my head.
Here's the PrimeSense TV demo. They do this. And we should point out that augmented reality was actually a demonstration of a Qualcomm chipset called Vuforia that uses PrimeSense technology. I don't know what this couple are actually doing.
People are going to be typing on a real QWERTY keyboard on the screen by holding up their fingers and doing this.
Actually, that's the Kinect in the Xbox One, the Kinect does a lot of this. For instance, when you're doing a Skype on the Xbox One, the Kinect will recognize faces. When somebody starts talking, it'll zoom in on that face using digital zoom. Stuff like that. I mean, just
that's perfect.
What it's doing is making the hardware aware of the real world, and I think that is very useful. Yeah. And then if there's an Apple TV, this would be a useful way to interface to it. I mean, I talk to the Kinect a lot on the Xbox One.
Right.
I'm watching a show. I could say Xbox pause. It pauses it. I could say Xbox rewind.
It's getting the interface out of the way.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah,
you could also do things like, instead of having a camera lens on a device, probably a desktop device or a TV mounted device, instead of having the lens actually pointing directly at the speaker, it's actually pointed at like a bubble of mirror. And so dynamically, the CPU can then sort of unwrap that image so that it seems as though the camera is pointing at whatever speaker is speaking, whatever is making the most noise or the most movement. I don't know exactly how Apple would use this sort of sensor. I'm just saying that I think that's the sort of ways that they would use it. And just by looking at things that are outside of Apple, so much of the cool stuff that's happening in mobile devices right now doesn't have so much to do with now it's got an 800 DPI density display, and it's not even so much the experience of the cameras or the CPUs. It's the idea of, let's give this device, either through software or through sensor connections, a way to figure out how you're using this phone. We're not going to light up the screen. We're not going to force you to light up the screen. We're going to figure out that, okay, this phone has just been experienced an upward movement and then an exposure to light, and now the screen is being turned. I'm guessing the user has just taken this device out of the pocket, so I'm going to get this phone ready for whatever he wants to see on that screen. Those are the sort of and now that there are other platforms, there are alternate home pages that try to figure out, okay, every single time it's been 8 o'clock at night on a Thursday, this user has wanted to get access to his Roku app. For controlling, because he seems to watch a lot of TV between 8 and 10 p.m. on a Thursday. So when this device is lit up on a Thursday night at around that time, I'm not going to automatically launch the Roku app, but I'm going to make sure that Roku app is very, very easy to get to and not buried three screens in. That sort of stuff is completely user-facing. It's not a subtle point. It's not a forward-thinking thing. It's that's the feature I wanted right at the moment I wanted it. Why doesn't this other phone do that?
It only took 9 years, but Grand Theft Auto San Andreas is coming out on iOS.
Awesome.
I just thought I'd mention that.
It's made for iPhone controller support.
Well, yeah, what is this MFI controller?
Yeah, made for iPhone controller.
Made for iPhone, MFI.
I feel like I'm only stealing cars and shooting people in the face on a fourth grade level, and everybody else is at the collegiate level now. My development has been so left back by iOS.
It's a PlayStation 2 game from 2004.
Yeah. People are going bananas about it. It's going like Android, iOS, and Windows Phone.
Yeah, that's exciting. I don't usually pay attention to patents because often Apple's patents don't reflect something they plan to make, but maybe something defensive or they don't want others to make. But they sent a 610-page document to the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO's database, not to the USPTO, for a patent on touch-related technologies. This is for the Touch ID, the fingerprint sensor mm-hmm. button, using it as a trackpad, for instance, sensing as the whorls and ridges of your thumb or finger move over it to use it as a trackpad.
I think that's really cool.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
I mean, that starts to get crazy because it knows all these other positions of your thumb, too, right. Your finger,
right.
As you've taught it.
You can get RSI at a whole new level.
They also patent the idea of using Touch ID from the display, not a separate button.
Yeah, that's important as the screens get bigger and the room around them for buttons starts to disappear.
Yeah.
So I really didn't understand that one. So what they said was you could use your finger as fingerprint control on the screen. Well, if they could have done it on the screen all along, what did they have to have that fancy Touch ID sensor for?
Patent doesn't mean they can do it.
Okay. The patent means they thought of it.
And
this would be really cool.
Apple patents is that quite often they'll patent so many things because they don't want you to know what they're actually working on. Right. If they patent 600 things, it's impossible to find out which one is actually what they're doing.
This does point back, though, to an earlier Apple patent that did allow the screen to look at you, a two-way mm-hmm. screen. Technology.
Well, and a lot of times it's almost anything you can think of because if you're even in that world that it might occur in, you want to make sure that no one else is getting that patent.
Yeah. Speaking of patents, I'm very sad to report Newegg, which decided that it wanted to defend cryptography patent against a patent troll, TQP, lost in court yesterday, sad to say, and has to pay $2.3 million. There it is, the historic Harrison County Courthouse in Marshall, Texas, where a jury, despite the fact that they even heard from Whitfield Diffie, the inventor of public key cryptography, didn't believe that it was, in fact, invented before this little company, TQP.
Well, I don't think people understand that Marshall, Texas is really the center of technology research and, you know, the jury of your peers is really going to know an enormous amount about.
This is why patent trolling works.
That's where the invisibility cloak was invented.
Oh, right.
If you got a tour of the high-tech facilities that you can't see there, oh boy,
yes.
Your head would spin, sir.
Yes.
Took 3 hours to decide that TQP's patent, which is tied to a failed modem business that was acquired by a patent troll, they've actually got more than $45 million in licensing fees up to now based on this. They say their patent covers SSL.
See, I'm thinking that, you know,
and anybody uses SSL,
I think we have to figure out how to get Google Plus involved because they were so good at getting rid of all the trolls in YouTube that now if we just simply apply it to patents, you know, I think it would work really well.
It's just really sad.
What I'm amazed by is that this isn't. I guess it's slowly moving to the surface. You know, as far as people realizing how absolutely idiotic this is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's
kind of.
The fact that someone had a failed business with a modem that somehow
I own SSL now. Right. And if you say you own SSL, the sky's the limit because every website in the world that wants to do secure transactions has to use SSL. And he clearly did not invent public key cryptography, but apparently the jury was not convinced.
And they would know.
And of course, eight good and true jurors of our peers.
Eight people who could spare the time
in Marshall, Texas.
Eight angry Texans.
It's red.
Oh, this is the Johnny Ive red one of a kind Mac Pro.
Did you get it, Leo? Was it you? The
$977,000. It was a deal. I wish I'd bid. Less than a million. They thought it'd go for $40,000 to $60,000. We talked about the one of a kind Leica designed by Johnny Ive. That one went for a little bit more. I think $1.9 million.
$1.4 million. With or without, I'm sorry, I'm looking at before the buyer's premium. So.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. $1.8 million is the quote here. Gold Apple EarPods, solid gold, rose gold, better than regular gold, $461,000. A one-of-a-kind aluminum desk designed by Ive and Mark Newsom sold for $1.68 million. Now, that's good. All of this means they raised 26 million dollars for Product Red to end AIDS in Africa. So it's a good cause, and I think that's one of the reasons he went for so much.
I had a great interview on Charlie Rose, really good too.
I didn't see the Charlie Rose interview. That was interesting.
Worthwhile just for Johnny. Like
Johnny Ive does not give interviews.
Well, yeah, and he's in charge of so much of Apple's direction, and his view on objects and their importance and what the direction he wants to go with them, I think, is fascinating no matter what he's talking about.
We had Leander Kani on the show last week. He wrote the book on Johnny Ive that just came out that really sounds fabulous. He said he even couldn't get, even though he knew friends of friends and so forth, could not get an interview with Johnny Ive. But so Charlie Rose got the big interview.
Because he is Charlie Rose.
He's Charlie Rose.
And it was for charity. Yeah.
And they really wanted to get that money, those bids up on the Sotheby's auction. Yeah. So that was...
You know that little notification that came up on screen when you were just looking at
that annoying notification. Yeah,
but you just said allow to let them send you notifications.
I know. You saw me do that, did you? Yeah. I know. I should just say don't allow, but maybe there's an important 9-to-5 Mac notification that I would want to see in my... I turn off notifications when I'm using the computer. See, I have do not disturb on.
You could have won the bids, Leo, if you only had notification.
Yep. The irony of that is they can't give you a notification, but they can give you a pop-up that says, do you want notifications even when Do Not Disturb is on?
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Apple.
I was curious to know about that Red Mac Pro, though. So it wasn't like just a shell. They had an actual one of those on display at Sotheby's.
Did it work?
They didn't boot it up. But I'm wondering if the actual device is going to be put in a box and sent to that person, and if that person is going to have access to pre-release firmware, pre-release whatever, or if it goes back to Cupertino, they basically do a core swap, and they make sure that this person doesn't have anything that should not have been leaving Cupertino in the first place. Nothing that isn't available to anybody else.
You know? I doubt very much they got to take it home from the auction room.
The interesting thing, because we talked about the Mac Pro being bent into shape last week, the Leica camera, they said that they designed that to be mass-produced. Everything about that, they thought about it, and they made it. But in order to make value, because he said, like, design is meant for everybody, so the only way to make it valuable was to make it one of a kind. So instead of these being mass-produced, it's only ever going to be one of them.
But they could be mass-produced.
Yeah, that's they wanted the to make a real, like a real designed object. Yeah.
So the auction, I should be clear, the auction raised $13 million, but Bill Gates matched it. Which is pretty freaking amazing. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation doubled the amount to $26.2 million to go to the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria in Africa. So that you know, Bill Gates deserves a pretty big pat on the back.
Absolutely.
He should get one of each, too.
Yeah, one of our guys just come.
Hey, Bill, we've decided you get a Red Mac Pro, and you get a Red Mac Pro. Wouldn't that be cool?
His wife wouldn't let him use it.
No.
Chris is actually recovering from malaria.
By the way, we didn't talk about that. So Chris, who is a good friend, a Pixel Corps member, went to Rwanda, right?
He works there.
He moved there. He loved it so much.
And we think, I mean, I have to talk to him a little bit more about it, but we think that he actually would have been better off if he had just been in Rwanda when he got it, because he came back to the United States and was, you know,
mistreated. It was the flu.
Malaria is, you know... I got a very mild version of it, which was still horrible.
You have malaria?
A long time ago. Yeah, so I mean, a couple years ago. And
it's not catching, is it?
No, it doesn't catch. Yeah, see, yeah, there we go. So
if a mosquito bit you and then bit me, would I get it?
Not anymore. So anyway,
what do you mean not anymore?
Well, while I
isn't
while
it always was, in you?
I don't think so.
It's always in you.
So a mosquito bit me and then bit you.
You never get cured from malaria.
But I'm telling you that once a mosquito bites me, I kill it. So, anyways,
you should put it in a jar and save it just in case.
Just out of spite,
Pretty much.
It's like when a dog bites you, you don't want it to.
I told you after I got malaria, I came back and I got one of those bug zappers. I got two of them for my backyard.
Yeah, mosquitoes are not good.
I turn them on and I'm having a barbecue. And you just hear this, and someone came over and he goes, "Did you know that 70% of the bugs that you kill with that are not mosquitoes?" And
my
response was, "Yeah, but 30% of them are."
What else are you killing?
Collateral damage.
You're not killing small marsupials.
Yeah, and the rest of them are bugs.
They're all bugs.
You know, so anyway.
You know what?
Probably not spiders, and those are the ones you want because they kill the mosquitoes.
You know, actually, you know what's funny is I have spiders around my house, and I actually don't, they have to really get in my way before I'll take them out.
I love because spiders.
And my wife was like, "Are you going to clean out all those spider webs?"
No.
And I'm like, "No, because they're catching the mosquitoes."
That's right.
You know, it's like you definitely become very aware to mosquitoes when you...
Chris apparently got very sick. He almost died.
And a lot of that was to be fair, it was mistreatment. It wasn't just that. It wasn't just that he had malaria.
Had he been in Rwanda, they would have recognized it immediately.
They would have treated him correctly, and you know, and so instead he. But he spent two weeks in intensive care.
Oh
and,
my God!
And a lot of his kidney operations are now almost back to normal, but he was down to 5%.
So he's going to be all right.
Yeah, and so he is going to fully recover, but it was it is a big deal. I mean, so we just face to face with you know what it does. It's pretty and it's, you know, it's something that is solvable. I think that's the other thing when we look at a lot of the things that are going on.
It can be cured.
You know, we had malaria. I mean, the CDC is in Atlanta because we got rid of malaria. You know, we mostly did it with DDT, but the main thing is you have to kill the vector. So if you look at like Rwanda is putting out another 2.3 million nets. A lot of it's making sure that people don't get bit. You know, when people don't get bit, the vector gets, you know, is blunted. Right. And and the hard part is, of course, in Africa, is you have to get all the countries doing it. You know,
in 2010, according to the World Health Organization, as many as 1.2 million people died of malaria.
Yep.
That, I mean, this is not a trivial disease. That's when Bill Gates released the jar of mosquitoes at the TED conference, got a lot of attention.
Right.
But what he was saying is these are the problem. I don't think there were malarial mosquitoes.
I think he's probably pretty careful of that. That would have been a big bummer.
Yeah, they were specially bred.
The thing is when you think about the number of people who die is 200 million. So it's 0.5% of the people that get malaria actually die from it because there's a couple different strands, you know. Strains.
Although there are treatment-resistant malarial strands now, too.
Exactly. And so there's there are definitely certain strains of this that are particularly bad. So it's
Alex, one of the most compelling speeches I ever saw at All Things D was Melinda Gates was talking about how everybody would beg Bill for money. Like he carried a letter in his wallet for 3 months from a guy who wanted him to buy a liver for his son. And, you know, clearly he could buy a liver for the guy's son out of what he pulled out of his seat cushions. But she said it drove him nuts because he couldn't figure out how to spend his money. So what they figured out finally to do was if they just treated this like a business, if they sat down and they wrote down all of the diseases in order from top to bottom of what kills the most people. And they said, okay, well, malaria, if we get rid of malaria, then we can move all of that money to the next disease down. Because once you get rid of it, you've gotten rid of it. It's not like it would crop back up again. As long as nobody hasn't had it in like 2 years, it's gone. So it was just a really interesting way she described how they looked at the problem of what diseases to try to cure and what to do with the money. And it was just kind of a neat description she gave.
Well, and I think that there's a good juxtaposition here of someone who's skilled at business and how a lot of our programs end up getting built. You know, a lot of the programs that are built in Africa, you know, are built by people who are really good at writing proposals and not necessarily, you know, business people.
Good at business.
And, you know, and we've seen the same challenge, you know, for instance, like with the website for healthcare, you know, is written by, you know, run by people who are really good at writing proposals, you know, and so I think that what's challenging is always figuring out actually how to get it done. And I think that is, and there's a lot of good ideas that get blunted because people don't know how to actually do them. And I think that this is one of the things, and you see the Gates, when you're in Africa, you see efforts from the Gates Foundation everywhere. You know, I mean, they're everywhere but they're very, very focused on output. So. Anyway, I don't know how that relates to Macintoshes.
It's important to get it out.
But yeah, it's worth it.
This doesn't really relate to Macintoshes either. It's also another sad story. You've heard me talk about the steampunk laptop that I had made from Datamancer, Richard Nagy. It took him a couple of years to make, made it by hand, and it's really quite a beautiful work of art. I'm sad to say Nagy passed away, apparently in a car accident in California, according to Cory Doctorow at Boing Boing. He was a very well-known steampunk artisan. In fact, if you look at the picture on Boing Boing of the steampunk computer that has turning wheels and knobs and has Victrola speakers for the audio, and it looks like a telephone. The funny thing is all of this stuff had real stuff inside it. My steampunk laptop is running a Windows 7 machine inside this handcrafted wood and stained glass and everything. And so very sad to hear that Richard Nagy, Datamancer, according to Cory Doctorow, has passed away. Sad story. Let us take a break. When we come back, there's proof. I've known it all along. Mike Elgin, writing for The Cult of Mac, says, yes, Apple does maintain a press blacklist of people in the media who are shunned and ignored for disloyalty.
Leo.
Blacklisted reporters, editorialists, and media personalities are denied access to information, products, and events. And once you're on the list, says Mike, it's almost impossible to get off. He says he's been on it for more than a decade.
I've only been on it for three years,
so that's not bad. I don't know that I'm on the list. But
that's what I was wondering reading that. Is how does Mike know he's on that list, and how does he know there is a list?
We got to ask him. I mean, he wrote the article. That makes it.
Oh, well, he wrote the article.
He wrote the book.
I got
it. Self-fulfilling.
But, I mean, we've heard lots of. Right there, using a Windows phone, and I think Andy still has access, right?
I don't know. I read the whole article. I mean, I really think that that's being blown out of proportion. I'm sure that every company, whenever they have a new product or a new thing that they want to get coverage on, they have an idea inside their heads of who they absolutely want to work with. I'm sure there's one or two that, and this is true for every single company, of who they maybe are not inclined to work with again. I think mostly it comes down to easy to track metrics, like what is this person's audience? Is it a localized audience? Is it an international audience? What kind of coverage have they written in the past? Is this person a bozo? Does this person absolutely not get us? And on the best day of our lives, will they get anything that we do? I don't think that any company feels as though they can control an individual writer by controlling access to the company. I think the one thing that you can do above everything else is to simply be a professional. Last year, I wrote a couple of things about Apple that I'm sure they weren't very happy with. My relationship with the people I know at Apple remained exactly the same. As usual, at times I'm invited to stuff, and times I'm not invited to stuff. At times I get stuff early, sometimes I don't. If I let that affect in any way, shape, or form how I do my job, I wouldn't be doing my job. So that's right. I think that's well thought.
You know, they're well thought out and fact based, and I think that stands on its own.
Thank you. I mean, that's really the point. I mean, if you're a professional, you'll get the job done no matter what help you get or what help you don't get. And I just don't think that it's in any way productive to try to work out that, oh, well, there's a blacklist and I'm on it in the larger that in any one individual think, oh, well, I'm on the blacklist. That's why I'm not getting my emails responded to, or someone else saying, well, geez, I don't know why I'm not getting my emails responded to. I write nothing but good things about Apple. Again, the thing is, until any company decides to say, here's the list of everybody that we like and everybody that we don't like, and all the reasons why we are going to help some people and why we're not going to help some other people, all you're doing is engaging in conjecture. And that's just absolutely pointless.
Well, I'm sure a lot of PR people feel the same way about us. I mean, I get hundreds, if not thousands, of PR emails a week, and I don't have the opportunity to answer half of them.
I'm sure they think there's a list.
Yeah, I'm sure they think that there's
They're all on my list.
Yeah, I mean,
no, absolutely. I agree with Andy. I don't, whether there's a blacklist or not, and Mike doesn't effectively prove that there is a blacklist, although I would imagine there is. It shouldn't affect anybody's willingness to do their job, pro or con. Yeah. And it certainly doesn't affect mine. And whether you have – his point is well taken that, for instance, he presumes, doesn't prove, that when the New York Times ran those stories, arguably hit pieces on Apple about the factories, Apple gave a big scoop to the Wall Street Journal very shortly after and gave him Tim Cook.
And I have to admit that if I was running a company and someone – you know, did
you do
did
that?
It, I would absolutely do that. Do the same thing.
Nothing to stop him from doing that. But if you, for instance, give product review loaners to people who you know will be positive,
well, why
and you avoid
you?
People.
Yeah, I mean,
of course
what you
could.
Do as a company,
of course you could and can. But the point of view of the public should be. Then
right.
suspicious of coverage of that company. For instance, and we'll take it out of the tech realm, it's very well known that Beltway journalism has its risks because your sources are the members of Congress that you're covering.
Mm-hmm.
And they can ice you, giving you no access, making it very difficult to do your job as a reporter inside Washington's Beltway. So it's a very careful balancing act as a reporter that you have to do.
I'll give you another example of
a known blacklist, which is John C. Dvorak. There was maintained at Microsoft for many years an enemies list, just mm-hmm. like a Nixonian enemies list. And John happened to walk by the office and see it, and he saw his name on it. And it said, enemies.
He was probably really happy about
while
that.
While he was in the building.
He probably loved it.
He was in the building. So, it never really hurt him in terms of his ability to do his job.
The Coke still got review units. He's still got his devices. And
if you're powerful enough, you will get review units.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that... I worked in PR for Sony Music a long time ago, and... my job was to get press, for bands, for Living Color or Indigo Girls or whatever.
And you're not going to give access to people who don't.
Well, the thing is so we would, shower on the guys, my job was to take guys out drinking, to take, make sure that they got to see the bands and make sure they got backstage and make sure, they did all those things. They didn't put my guys in hot rotation. And, I'd put up with that for a couple times. Then after that, they're not getting backstage and they're not getting, pre-releases. They're not getting giveaways and not getting, I'm not going to, I have a whole bunch of people I got to take care of, and I'm not going to take care of the ones
no
that are paying.
It's no accident, for instance, that Gizmodo has never been in an Apple event after they bought that stolen iPhone. That's no secret.
Or that Leo's not been in an event after he's
Skyped a stream. I have no idea whether I'm on a list or not, and it doesn't really matter to me. I probably wouldn't.
You just like joking about it.
But speaking
Leo.
To
I
Apple,
joke, I like to joke
but,
about
but
it.
But speaking to Apple, the only way that you can prove that there is no blacklist is for Leo to be at the next Apple event.
Well, I there was a time when I was invited to every event, and they sent me little Christmas packages, which I felt ethically very challenged by, wrapped with ribbon and all the new iPods in it. There was a time when I was on somebody's good side. Right. But I stopped taking loaners a long time ago, for the most part, buy everything I need, and I can afford to do that. Right. I do feel sorry for a working journalist who cannot afford to do that, who's trying to cover Apple and doesn't, get any support. But that
I think you sort of hit upon it. I think when the complaint that some people will have is that when you really peel the onion and get to the very core of it, it's that Company X did not send me a free one of these for 30 days, and they did not send it to me early. Neither of these things will prevent you from writing about that product.
It's not the end of the world.
If you don't have it on, if they didn't send you one and you have it available on release day, you're perfectly welcome to go buy one on your own. If you can't buy one on your own, you probably know somebody who has access to one. And if you don't have that, you can. There are ways to get your hands on one that don't involve theft. The only thing I really don't like about these sort of conversations is that it comes down to a sense of entitlement that I have a big audience. I should be getting a certain amount of treatment, or, hey, look, you don't know who I am. You should be helping me out as much as you possibly can.
Unfortunately, and this is a problem I have, anytime I talk about it, that's what it ends up sounding like. I'm being peevish.
Oh, I know.
And I don't mean to be peevish. In fact, Mike says clearly, at the end of his article at the Cult of Mac, the technology press is far more independent and ethical than people generally give them credit for. Yes, Apple has a blacklist. And yes, you should know about it so you can be a better informed media consumer and consumer electronics customer. But ultimately, it's not that big of a deal. So he really agrees with what you're saying.
I think there's a lot of freedom in not being stuck.
I love it. I don't talk to PR people. I don't go to company events. I don't take vendor meetings because in the long run, it's better for me and my coverage not to have a relationship with companies. And go ahead.
It's not for me. I mean, I really enjoy having a dialogue with the company that makes these things, because sometimes only when you're sitting in a room with somebody and they are explaining to you why they built this thing, why they think this is important, why they went ahead with this product. And especially if you're there in the room and you get to really look into their eyes and see, am I the 11th person that is being read this script that they came up with? Or if I ask them questions that make them go off script, am I going to see the exact same amount of childlike pleasure? The apex has always been for me, Steve Jobs presenting the iPhone and Steve Jobs presenting the iPad. You saw a guy who was like giddy with excitement, like he was unwrapping a gift for the entire world. And I don't necessarily believe that it's important to maintain a distance, because sometimes I will look at a product without benefit of the story around it and not get why someone was making this. And it's not as though my opinions will be changed by hearing hearing from the engineers who came up with this certain feature or lobbied for this or that. But it's sometimes interesting to hear that backstory, because that's a perspective that you don't have. So
more logical, Andy, than picturing them actually spending energy, let's put this guy on the list, where do we keep the list? Yeah, I just can't picture a corporation like Apple doing that. I can picture a meeting.
Oh,
on,
I can. I can. Oh, oh God, are you kidding, Allison? No, absolutely. They are, look, they're humans. They can be petty.
I disagree.
Absolutely.
I disagree. I really do think that it comes down to every single time. I think it comes down to how many, if we've got eight copies of the new iPhone that we can give to people ahead of time, those are precious commodities. Who do we like or who do we not like? It's what are our goals with these eight and only eight
re-released devices? I talk to more people about Macintosh products than anybody except for the rare few. I do a radio show that's heard by a million people every weekend. I do Mac Break Weekly. And if Apple doesn't invite me to the event, it's not because I don't have a large and important pulpit. It's because they don't like me. It's very simple. I don't mean to be peevish about it. I'm not. I don't care.
But there is definitely a list,
and I'm on it. If there weren't, why wouldn't they invite me?
I don't think it comes down to like or not like. I think it comes down to goals. That's all.
Come on. I talked to Andy. I have a syndicated radio show that talks to 200 stations, talks to a million people every weekend about what products to buy, and you think that that's not important to Apple more than USA Today, more than Wall Street Journal, more than New York Times? It should be. If it's not, then they're not paying attention.
The argument that I'm making is with the word like. You know, Apple is a company. They are 10,000 people.
I'm merely saying that the reasonable business decision would be to curry favor with me, which they don't do. And my suggestion is they don't do it. And it's fine with me, by the way. I wouldn't take it. But it's fine with me. But the reasonable reason is, there was a very much of a cliff where I went from being favored to unfavored. It was obvious to me. Yeah. I don't care about that. I don't want to go to their events. But the point is, I'm pointing out, there's no question in my mind. It's obvious. And it's not because of whether I talk to people or not, or whether I have an importance to their business. A prudent business decision would be to curry favor with one of the major mainstream tech reporters in the country, period. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't do it with John C. Dvorak either.
Again, my only difficulty is with like or not like, or whether they have...
I'm not saying they don't like me. I don't know whether they like me. I can't tell you that.
I'm saying that I have no knowledge of the inner desires or workings of Apple. I'm also saying that it's also not important to you or I that we know what their inner desires are.
No, it's not important at all. I do my same coverage exactly.
It's not only...
But you can't tell me John Gruber has as much importance to Apple in the public eye...
I will tell you. People have asked me about this. I've given them the exact same answer. The reason why they work so closely with Gruber is huge audience. Not only that, but a huge international audience.
A much bigger audience. He's ten times the audience of Gruber. Are you kidding me?
He has a specialist audience. He has credibility, and also he gets Apple, and that doesn't mean that if you don't get Apple, you're wrong. I'm saying that his thinking. I'm saying I believe that his way of thinking about what is the role of design, what is the role of hardware, what is the interaction between a company and its customers and a product and its customers are very much in sync with Apple. So when people inside Apple read his stuff, they hear a kindred spirit speaking,
and they know he's not going to go off the ranch. I don't know of any
thinking inside of Apple, but my guess would be that they know that if he went off the ranch would be because he felt very, very, he felt very deliberately about it. He wouldn't do it accidentally. He wouldn't do it carelessly, and he would express his sentiments very, very closely. All I'm saying is that what every single person who is not a bozo wants is for their own work to tell the story of what kind of professional they are. I think that readers are very, very good at telling that this person got a piece of hardware and he wrote 1,000 words on this piece of hardware, and 800 words of it were how cool it was to get hardware from Apple. This guy is a bozo. I don't care what he's saying. Also, from the flip side, if you write 2,000 words on a certain laptop, and you're saying that this was I won't identify the columnist, it wasn't me, but it was like, it's still like the hallmark of bad tech reporting for me that here's the new titanium Mac PowerBook, but it's okay, but you shouldn't buy it because Apple's going to go out of business. It's like 1,000 word review. You spent 800 words talking about what you think is the death of the company. Again, that's bozo behavior. If you build up your own reputation, everything that the ship will ride itself, you will get safely into the port under calm seas.
That's right. Nobody's saying we're not even discussing that. That's not even the issue. The issue is, does Apple try to manipulate the press with a blacklist?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I think that if they thought that they could manipulate this person, that they know that this person is of little value to them. They don't want They don't just want somebody to write nice things about them.
Really? You think the person's of little value to them if they know that they can get a good story out of them?
What's value? Okay, it's easy. I'm saying it's very, very easy to get a good story. If you walked into the Apple store, found somebody who knows how to operate Tumblr, say, I'll give you this free MacBook Air if you write something about it, they'll get a lot of good press about it. They'll get a lot of good Tumblr posts about it. What they want is, again, somebody with a large audience, someone with a reputation, so that when that person decides to use that reputation as a spotlight to swing it to this product, to say, I want all of you people who read me or listen to me or watch me to take a look at this because I think it's important enough that you look at this because I'm interested in it as well. That's what the value is. There are very few high value people like that who can be manipulated, because by the time you've developed that kind of a reputation, you're no longer dazzled by the idea, oh well, I got to borrow a free Nexus 5 for 2 weeks. This is awesome. You know, that's what I mean when I'm saying that Apple wants a high value person to speak highly of their products, and those people are not the sort of people who are going to be swayed by the idea of getting something early.
So we wondered when the Mac Pro came out with 4K Thunderbolt display ports, why there was no 4K display.
Because they hadn't gotten to it yet.
Perhaps, according to a Redditor who's done some digging, a display supplier overseas with ties to Apple is currently making 4K desktop displays.
Yay.
Designed for Thunderbolt. It's AU Optronics. They've started making 27 and 32. Ooh. 32-inch panels.
You know, still my heart. You know, it's like,
wait a minute. You
get a little bigger and it turns into an Apple TV.
Yeah. 3840 by 2160.
Mr. Laporte, please. Adult diaper for Mr. Laporte.
Using DisplayPort signaling, which is the key. That's, by the way, something I learned. You can have Thunderbolt, you can have DisplayPort, but unless your Thunderbolt has DisplayPort, you can't put a display on your Thunderbolt port.
It's very complicated.
I don't understand it myself. But anyway, these do. They made displays for the first iPad mini. They did not make the Retina mini. And there are no concrete, you know, reports about Apple doing a Thunderbolt. 4K display. I just feel like that's the other shoe that could drop when they announce the Mac Pro later. Sometime in December, right?
I would be surprised if we do not see a 4K monitor with Final Cut Pro.
You got to.
I just spent all weekend in Final Cut 10, and I got to tell you, the screen's too small. Not my laptop screen.
27 inches too small.
Yeah, it's too small.
32.
27's fine. I'm saying, but smaller than. I mean, I really want 4K, and I want a big screen, and would have been much nicer for what I was doing.
And here's another story from Cult of Mac. I find hard to believe Apple's first foray into wearable computing, the eye hearing aid. Well, this is another patent, right?
Yeah.
The Danish-based hearing aid company, the fourth largest hearing aid manufacturer in the world, has been collaborating with Apple to make a device called the Lynx that would allow users to stream voice and music from their iOS devices.
So that
to the hearing aid, to the 2.4 gigahertz.
Well, and a hearing aid, I mean, I think a more accurate description of this would be an IFB. So, you know, that's what I'm wearing right here. So, you know, I've got this little thing in my ear.
Oh, you mean this is not a hearing aid? It's an interruptible foldback mechanism?
Yes.
No one knows what an IFB is. What is an IFB?
So this is this little thing in my ear if you're watching the video.
An earpiece.
Yeah. And so we have ones that we use that are, this one's the cheap one, right? This is the cheapy one. But we have ones that you put into your ear and there's no cable to it at all. And you can have those using either inductance, so that someone's wearing like a little necklace under their shirt, or you can do it on 2.4 frequency. And so
I'd buy a few of those for the studio.
Yeah, they make them. Clearcom doesn't make them. Anyway, there's a bunch of different
other Clearcom does not make them.
I don't think Clearcom makes the wireless ones. Huh? But the wireless ones, there's a lot of people that make them. Otto makes them. Anyway, there's a bunch of different companies that make them. And so, so those are the. I think that's probably what they're talking about, is being able to put something in your ear that is not out there and around and not connected and still being able
to
hear it.
Do you picture that being something that you're going to take out your regular hearing aid and then put that in?
No, it's not a hearing aid at all. It's just we use them so that you can have it on like we can do the conversation that we're having right now.
Sure.
And you don't see anything. You know, we do them specifically so you don't see anything while you're there.
That's what this was about, right? This was specifically about hearing aids.
It's a hearing aid maker that's doing it. But the issue is that is incredibly useful. Think about, you know, how goofy people look with their little Bluetooth, ear sets and everything else. What if you just got to a point where you had something in your ear and then it's just you're kind of permanent, like all day, just kind of there's one ear. And the reason that hearing aids are interesting is because hearing aids oftentimes and in real space, in-ear options, you'll hear everything. Like this one that I'm wearing right now blocks everything. So I can only hear from one side because I hear the show on the other side. In a hearing aid environment that is also hooked to a 2.4, you're hearing everything out of that ear. You're just putting something into your ear that you're hearing everything that happens around you, but you're also hearing your phone call, music, you know, all those other things. And I just have to say that I would buy one of those in a second.
And he's not even deaf. Okay.
Like the idea, like just stick something in my ear, and from now on, when I get phone calls, it's in my ear. I don't have to pick up my phone.
Well, how is that different from a Bluetooth ear?
Well, because no one would see it. Number one, number two is
it's an ear.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's not wiggling around on your ear. It's not connect. I mean, it's the problem is that the Bluetooth piece is it's always hanging. You know, right. And you're dealing with it, and you look like a
dork.
Well,
it's a microphone too. Would this be a microphone?
You could either have a separate microphone, or you could have it. I mean, you could definitely do it from the ear. The audio quality would be pretty bad, but you could do it that way, or you could have something attached to you that would let you do it. But it just would get rid of that whole wired connection versus Bluetooth. It'd be pretty nifty.
Web76, somebody put it hung in our chat room, says he uses something from Siemens called the Tech TEK. You hang it around your neck. And apparently it's a wireless connection to your mobile phone, your TV, and other audio devices. Sends audio signals to your ears in true stereo, enhanced speech clarity. I guess this is for people who are hard of hearing, but is that what you kind of want? It's always can be connected to your phone, TV, DVR, or MP3 player using Bluetooth. And it goes, see those go right in your ear.
I want one of those.
I don't know much about the technology, but that's a big deal with modern digital hearing aids. Where there's like standards, there are standards for connectivity to electronic devices, right. So that you don't have to worry about operating a phone. You don't have to even have to necessarily worry about switching it to mono if you have a certain kind of hearing loss. It's really interesting stuff and the sort of stuff that's absolutely invisible to people who are outside of that community.
We're going to take a break. We're talking about Macintosh, Andy Yanocco. Chicago Sun-Times is here and the celestial waste of bandwidth from beautiful... Is it snowing in? You're in Massachusetts. Is it snowing?
No, not yet. Although tomorrow, the most awful travel day ever. We're supposed to get hellaciously bad weather. So,
I have
canned goods. So I might not. I might not go out for Thanksgiving. I might just
It's kind of a yearly ritual to watch Andy's power go out, his refrigerator go dead for a week, and it's just.
I'll get some more nice columns about it
every year.
While I'm smelling like all the food in my fridge.
You might consider moving to somewhere with a more salubrious climate, Mr. Yanocco.
Or maybe just buying one of those generators with the bicycle wheel hooked up to it so I can at least cook up a hot pocket on day three of the power outage.
Pedal power. From NozillaCast, Allison Sheridan is here of Podfeet. What is NozillaCast? Tell us about that.
So it's an audio podcast that is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. In other words, it's really biased. but I do a lot of tech review stuff, gadgets, software, that kind of thing. I have listener reviews. And then the second half of the show is called Chit Chat Across the Pond. And it's often a guy named Bart Bouchatz from Ireland who talks about security. We're doing a Taming the Terminal series, things like that. Then I'll have photography topics on too, like with Kirshen Sia was on this week to talk about how she photographs cyclists. And so it's kind of all over the map, but always tech and always Mac biased. But I'll do Linux stuff, and I've had Linux people on too.
I love the idea of teaching people the terminal. That's a dying
art.
Yeah,
it's a cool series. He's a really good teacher, and I kind of play the stooge a little bit. Yeah. I usually know some of what he's talking about, but I'm supposed to be, when I get confused, I'm supposed to say so he slows down for the rest of us.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Huh? What? I don't understand. Also here from Parts Unknown, Mr. Alex Lindsay of Pixel Core. Got your yearly haircut, I see.
Yeah, exactly. I was turning. Well, what happened is I can't, you know, Candace, you know, I tried to get a hold of her. She's very busy. So
we share a hairdresser, I think.
Yeah, I think we do. Yeah. So I did get my haircut, and I'll get it cut in 6 months again. After I turn into like a hippie and I have it in a ponytail.
It. It's always fun.
Yeah. So
you know what time of year it is based on Alex's hair.
Well, you can always tell my travel schedule is broke enough to get in and get my haircut. So.
Right.
So I got a week. We only had one event this week.
Where are you going next?
I am in Los Angeles next week. And
a movie thing?
Yes, a movie thing.
Oh, I love it.
So we got a movie thing.
He meets all these famous people.
We got a movie thing, a car thing, a giveaway thing, and a game thing.
You probably can't say, but if you could, of the people you're going to meet next week, who are you most excited about?
The movie thing.
Yeah, I know. But just give us one star.
There's a big movie coming out next week.
Brad Pitt. There's a big movie. Will Smith.
Yes.
You've met, who's your favorite that you've met so far?
Oh.
You've met the president.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met the first lady?
I can't get into who I met, who I haven't met. But there's been a lot of, let's just say there's been a lot of hangouts. There's been a lot of hangouts there.
So Ben Affleck, you gonna meet Ben Affleck?
No, no.
You're gonna meet Aaron Paul? Maybe you'll meet Aaron Paul.
No, no. There's a big.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
No.
I know who you're gonna meet. Will Ferrell. Is he gonna?
No, that would be funny.
Will he being wearing a red suit?
That would be funny.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I saw.
Funniest for, ads they're doing with the Anchorman 2.
Yeah, exactly. No,
he can't tell us.
So the movie funny. One is going to be awesome.
I love teasing him.
That's all I got to say.
So you can tell me whisper in my ear and I can go.
Yeah.
Ron Burgundy. Also here.
I would love to do, if Will Ferrell's listening, I would love to do a hangout with Will Ferrell.
Oh, it'd be so out of control. It'd be so fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So fun.
Yep.
Also from iMore.com. And Crackberry. What is the Crackberry site?
iMore.com, Crackberry, Android Central, Windows Phone Central. We get around.
He does it all. Mr. Rene Ritchie, iMore.com.
Rene, just for fun, if someone made you an offer for that domain, Crackberry.com, are you going to be looking forward and thinking that, I think $5,000 for that domain name is going to be more valuable than coverage about the BlackBerry for the next 10 years?
The mayor of Toronto is listening.
It's the new Rob Ford site. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. Now, I'm telling you, when you set up that new site, you want to use a hosting service. It's never going to go down because what if you get really popular? We brought the Siemens site down. Everybody went over to see the Siemens tech and the site went down. Squarespace never goes down. I challenge you to bring down. I'll tell you what. Everybody go to inside.twit.tv. That's our Squarespace site, our internal blog. If you all went there at the same time, if 100,000 people went at the same time, Squarespace, they've got the squirrels in the basement or something, and they just fire it up, and they go, and they never run out of bandwidth.
It's the power of the cloud.
It's the power of the cloud. And I think part of the reason is because it's so tightly integrated between the software that they're running, the content management system that's on top of the hosting that they're running, they have absolute control. Squarespace will give you a gorgeous site for your photography portfolio, for your blog, for your store. They do e-commerce too. It's mobile. All the sites are mobile. Every one of their templates is designed to be mobile responsive. That means it looks great on a 27-inch display, on a 32-inch display, on a 4-inch display.
In 4K.
In 4K. It all looks great. In fact, when you upload an image to your site, they automatically make 9 different versions of it, so one for every size. Go to squarespace.com, click Get Started, and get started. 2 weeks free. You don't need to give them a credit card or any personal information. Your first challenge will be to pick a template. They've got 20 starting points. I don't even want to call them templates. Starting points, but then you customize it. And if you click any one of them, you'll see that once you start customizing it, they all look unique. And you don't have to be a JavaScript or a CSS guru to do this. It's all drag and drop, point and click. Some beautiful, these are all real Squarespace sites, just gorgeous stuff. I want you to visit squarespace.com. Take advantage of this, 2 weeks free. You don't have to give them any personal information, just your email address. So if you forget your password, you can get back into it. And then once you do that, and you decide you want to buy, wow, you will be blown away by the pricing. Sites start as low as $8 a month when you buy an annual plan. By the way, an annual plan is a good idea because they'll hook you up with a domain name for free and all of that. put it all together. The most popular is the unlimited plan. $16 a month, you get unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs. You can, by the way, if you're a JavaScript developer, use their developer platform. It's sweet. And if you decide you want to sell stuff, maybe the holiday season's coming and, I don't know, you make tea cozies and you'd like to get a brisk and booming business in tea cozies. If you're not selling online, you know, you're kind of missing out on the big international audience. It's only $24 a month with an annual plan. And you get everything you need. There are no transaction fees paid to Squarespace. That's the cost. You can have unlimited physical goods. If you have digital tea cozies, you can sell those too. Service products, we come and we service your tea cozy. You can sell that too.
What would you do with a digital tea cozy?
Well, you'd keep your digital tea warm is what you do. Unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, storage, contributors, inventory tracking is included. They do tax calculations. They do shipping, coupon controls, the works. I should tell you one more thing. It's 10% off on your brand new account. 10% off when you use our offer code MacBreak and the number 11 for the 11th month. MacBreak 11. Squarespace.com. No surprise pricing. I like that. What do you, you found what you want?
I'm getting that.
You're getting the Siemens iMini? Wait a minute.
That's all I'm saying. Go to hearingplanet.com.
Hearingplanet.com.
I've been doing lots of research.
You understand that Alex is not deaf in any way. He just wants the world.
The one that I'm familiar with is the Phonak. See these Phonak ones? These are popular in
broadcast.
So go to hearing aids.
Hearing aids.
Go to Phonak.
Phonak.
Well, that's the one that I'm most familiar with. So Phonak.
I want
these.
The Bolero. Wow.
So these little ones. See these little ones right here? That's all in ear.
That's in ear. Virto Q.
So that like is in your ear.
$15.99.
Well, and this might be just a hearing aid. So the Phonak ones. I don't know which one we used in the past, but.
I'm getting real. Oh yeah, easily connects to mobile phones, TVs, computers, tablets, MP3 players.
Right.
There's a standard, is what you were saying for this. I know. I see hearing aid ready phones. Right. Is that Bluetooth? How does that work?
I think there's some magic. More of I don't know. We have a transmitter and receiver, it's 2.4. It's not Bluetooth. This is more like a Wi-Fi kind of.
I'm gonna need one of these any minute now, so I might as well. You know, after years in broadcasting with headphones turned up way too high, I'm pretty much deaf.
You get the tinnitus?
Yeah, my ears ringing all the time. Do you have tinnitus?
Yeah.
That explains the high pitched tone I'm hearing from your head. No, it's sad because I live somewhere.
That's the implants.
I got a new house. It's quiet.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I now know how my ears are ringing constantly because it's so quiet.
Yes.
Bring me the noise.
That's
back.
The sound of silence. That's what he was talking about when he was singing the song.
It exactly, Allison. I used to sit right up next to the speakers. I always had the headphones on. And you know, when you're a DJ for years,
you want to hear your voice.
You want to hear exactly how good you sound.
Yeah, exactly.
And you end up turning them up, and then you get deaf, and you turn them up again, and you get deafer, and you turn them up again. Really soon, you're talking like this. Because nobody can hear you.
Can I tell you, just in case you're wondering, if you meet a sound guy who talks loudly, that's not your sound guy.
That's pretty normal.
I'm just telling you.
You know what's
funny? He's not the guy that should work on your event because it means that your sound, your audio guy is deaf.
What?
No, I got blind cameraman.
I want to defend us because I have tinnitus. My ears are ringing. Uh-huh. I don't hear as well as I used to, but I still hear well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I can hear stuff.
The quality.
It's quality, not quantity.
No, I still test well. You know, like I always go, oh, I'm going deaf and I test. Well.
But for instance, when I'm listening to codecs, Steve Gibson was trying a speech codec, and I said, no, I don't like that as well.
Right.
Because I can hear stuff that my hearing's not gone.
He's like a cat. That's why they call him Whiskers.
Get rid of the high frequency stuff I can hear, like little girls' voices, just the high frequency stuff. I need something to just burn that out.
Can you hear the mosquito sound?
I can.
I could as of about 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm 55 now, so I was in my early 50s when I could still hear it, and it was painful.
And for all the kids who don't like going up to the board, the key is understanding that the flat part of the chalk is what makes.
Look at that. He tore his headphones off.
Thanks for that. He didn't appreciate that at all.
By the way, Leo, be careful with that. I played that for a crowd once because I thought it was a joke. And several young people told me they had a headache for more than a day.
I'm really sorry. It's actually
painful.
I heard nothing at all.
No, I heard that.
That was 11 kilohertz.
Well, that's nothing.
I feel like, the Superman
movie. You know he's going to keep playing with it, don't you?
With me.
No, I'm not going to touch it anymore because the whole chat room erupted in pain. As if 1,000 souls
yeah, so the key, the,
snuffed out.
The key is to understand that the chalk, see, this is why you get rid of chalk, is the chalk, the flat part of the chalk creates the screech on the chalkboard.
Yeah.
And so what you do, I used to hate going up to the board, so I would just go up and just put the flat part on, and I would just go, rit, 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 rit. And then I'd look over like, I don't understand what's wrong with this chalk. And then I go, rit, 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 rit. And you only get called up once.
It's amazing that even through all the squeezing and compression we do, of this video, that 11 kilohertz tone
is still getting out there.
Still tortured our chat room.
Yes, but if we were on AM radio, you wouldn't hear it at all.
Oh, no.
Weaponized it.
And if you're an AM DJ, you would not hear it either, as I did not. I am so sorry. You know, half the chat room's going, I have a headache. The other half saying, what? I didn't hear anything.
Exactly.
Isn't that weird?
They made a good point. Maybe. You might want to mute that from the...
That chat comment is very, very correct. There are going to be a lot of people who are like have their headphones on the bus that's suddenly going to be slapping them away.
And their head will explode like scanners.
Did you hear it, Brian?
I did, yeah.
He did, because he's a young guy. So you know where it was. Can you cut that out? And then everybody listening at home will go, what is he talking about? I must be deaf.
Yeah, no one on the recording is going to hear it at all.
Yeah, we're going to take that out. iPhones banned from German parliament. Does that mean they can still have Android phones but no iPhones?
They're playing too much Candy Crush?
A few, yes, probably.
They're not using micro USB.
iPads were banned from 10 Downing Street due to spying fears. And now the German parliament, concerned about NSA eavesdropping.
Oh, God.
But the odd thing is why they decided iPhones are more...
It's an American company, Leo. The NSA invented them.
Only software approved by the Bonn Federal Office for Information Security can be used. I presume that Androids are also banned, but this focused on iPhones. It's an article from Cult of Mac. That's odd. Apple is selling SIM-free unlocked iPhone 5Ss in the U.S. Hallelujah.
And why is that such a big deal? We had that for the iPhone 5, right?
Yeah, just they didn't have it right away for the 5S. Oh. You had to buy it from a carrier. Unlocked's great because you could put it.
I was glad now that I fell behind. Yeah. I haven't got my 5S yet.
Not cheap. $849 for the 64
gig. I spent a lot of time overseas, so it's...
It prevents scalping. That's perfect for you. First few days of launch.
Oh, that's why they do it up front? They want to make sure...
A lot of places they get so many people, like it's always the same 20 dudes lined up in front of the Apple store every day to buy unlocked units and send them other places. Right. And if they make them unavailable, then that lets actual customers show up and get iPhones on launch day.
Yeah, I think unlocked is great. And it's what I generally buy, even though you pay, of course, a premium because it's unsubsidized.
No, I was told I have a friend in Zimbabwe. He's like, yeah, if you took 10 iPads and you could basically fly to Zimbabwe and stay for a week and pay for the whole thing.
Right. Just don't bring it to Bonn, apparently.
Yes, evidently. Well, don't try to sell it to Bonn.
It's going to become more and more important, too, now that the Moto G is now shipping. And here's an unlocked phone that's really, really good that costs $200 flat and you own it. So I think there's going to be more pressure, particularly in the United States, particularly as T-Mobile and other carriers are doing a lot more, are trying to draw a lot more bring your own device people. To like contract month-to-month contract-free data plans and voice plans, so I think that it's going to be more and more important that makers have an unlocked option that is not something buried on page 3 of 3 submenus on the website. But do you want it white or black? Black, good. Do you want it locked or unlocked? Got it.
I always think of news stories from China as kind of the equivalent of news of the world. You don't really. You know, it could be alien sighting.
Vampire baby.
You don't really, you know, and there's always the woman who got electrocuted by her iPhone.
Right.
Things like that. But this one is such a good story. So just take it with a grain of salt. A thief stole an iPhone, pickpocketed an iPhone from a man named Zhou Bin. Zhou had a lot of contacts on his phone, no backup. He texted the thief, "I know you are the man who sat behind me. I can assure you that I will find you." This is the equivalent of
Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson's.
Yeah,
I have certain skills.
Yeah.
The text message goes on to say, "Look through the contact numbers in my mobile, and you will know what trade I am in. Send me back the phone to the address below if you are sensible." He didn't get the phone back. Apparently, he works in an industry linked in China to gang activity. He didn't get the phone back, but he did get a parcel containing his SIM card and 1,000 handwritten phone numbers, contact numbers.
I would have sent the phone back.
Oh, good. A sample of the crook's handwriting and probably fingerprints, too. That was smart.
I'm sure it's going to take us down or get us taken down off of YouTube, but I just gotta play this.
Here we go.
Oh, wait a minute. There's an ad. Hold on a second. We don't want to play ads when we steal videos. We want the original.
So is that advice to make sure that we start to salt our contact database with, like...
Yeah.
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 Secret Service.
Tony Soprano. 555.
One of the guys in our team names is Wi-Fi. You know, when we build Wi-Fi signals, it's always NSA surveillance truck.
Yeah. That's where we're getting the FBI surveillance fans. Probably from you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Liam Neeson, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Give him his phone back!
If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you.
What?
But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you.
Oh, boy.
And I will kill you.
Send him his iPhone. Send him his iPhone.
That's what he should have said. He just should have sent the movie.
I'm putting that on my iPhone. And then I'm just going to have it triggered. You can have the sound trigger, the high-pitched sound, but maybe I could have Liam Neeson.
The high-pitched sound would be kind of useful.
Or the mosquito sound.
Yeah.
11 kilohertz tone. I will find you. I don't know if I believe that story. A lot of the stories that come out of the Chinese news services are a little pat.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
But
it's a good story. China Mobile is going to get the iPhone. According, it's official.
One day.
One day. Someday.
Chung-ching.
December 18th.
December 18th. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the biggest carrier in China has never had the iPhone. Other smaller carriers have. The Chinese government has confirmed the date, so it must be true. The world's biggest carrier.
Do you think that's going to cause a significant shift in global market share?
Wow. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's an expensive phone.
I don't think it's global market share, but I think it's a lot of revenue. I mean, I don't think Apple needs to change the global, the, you know, 1% or 2% in China would be an enormous number.
According to an analyst in Hong Kong, China Mobile has the most wealthy subscriber base. 700 million subscribers, at least 10% or 70 million wealthier ones would be potential customers. So potentially 70 million iPhones.
Yeah.
That's a number. That's more than they sold last quarter.
Apple has 0%, nor do they want any percent of the under $400 phone market. But they have an incredible amount of the over $500 phone market, and that's what they want to target.
Isn't that interesting? And still the analysts are saying, oh, Apple, come on, why didn't you offer a cheap 5C? Why did you make the 5C?
Is there a metric that shows what percentage is Apple versus Android over $400?
Oh,
yeah. I was talking to Ben Baharin from TechPinions about it, and he's got a lot of stats up. I think he did a global smartphone post very recently on it. But it's the same thing with computers where Apple issued the netbook market. They just have no interest in the low end, and they have a very, very large share of the high end.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's definitely a whole argument about, you know, the financial quality of the consumer as well, which is why, you know, you want to have... One of the advantages of selling something that's more expensive is that everyone that's buying it is also buying a lot of other things, you know, and it's just not the raw number of customers is not necessarily the full value of the process.
Yeah, the market is big enough that it needs to be segmented now, like a lot of other industries have been for a while.
There's a lot of things you can sell to a BMW, you know, someone buying a new BMW that you're not going to sell to someone buying a new Kia.
Yeah, exactly.
So the consensus then is it's not worth trying to go after the sub $400 market?
Yeah.
Netbook market, Leo.
I mean, but it's in any business, you have to decide where you fit in. You know,
I got to point this out. Apple has not, in the past, if you look at the iPod, for instance, they, as we've pointed out before, they ate up the top end of the market, and then when they'd eaten as much as they could, when they'd feasted as well as they could,
I think if it made sense,
they
for them
expanded
to
the low end of the market and then basically killed it.
Well, and I think it makes sense if they can do that. I don't know if the iPod market and the phone market are the same as far as being able to do something that cheap and make it, you know, compelling. I think that if Apple figures out a way to do that, I think that they probably would. you know, keep on going that direction. But you do have to be careful of, you know, as you go down, it's usually more trouble and
I remember going to a class many years ago taught by a brilliant guy named Alex Lindsay. It was the first time I'd ever seen him speak. And
that guy's crazy.
A bit of a prick.
He's also deaf.
Arrogant.
He said, this crazy deaf guy, Alex Lindsay. Anyway, he said that the reason he writes tools for people who use Apple products is because people who use Apple products will spend a lot of money.
Yeah, I remember him saying that. It's true.
I said they'll spend more money and it's less. They'll spend more money and they and they're also easier to take care of. You know, it's just, you know, it's
well, yeah, that too.
Yeah, so.
Alex, I did find an article, techopinions.com. Unfortunately, it's phones over $400, but it's in U.S. share. So
yeah,
it's
well, not we know they dominate 60, there.
But yeah, it shows 64%.
But Apple only has 12% globally of the phone market, and that's because their phones are so expensive.
Yeah.
Right. So the question is it worth doing something to get the other, you know, 78% or 88%?
Yeah, I don't remember what the market is. We probably find the exact story, but there was, you know, when Dodge came out with their new truck, you know, this is a long time ago, with their Dodge Ram truck or whatever, and they went through opinion polls. They found that 15% said they just absolutely had to have it. And I believe that it was like 60% said it was the worst, or 50% they said it was the worst thing they'd ever seen, and 35% were and they said, well, that's a failure. We're not going to do that. And the CEO was like, are you crazy? Our current market size is 7%, and going to 15% would, you know, double our revenue. You know, it's like, you know, you just have to. And the point is that in a very mature market like cars. You know, no one has that massive percent. So, you know, we're used to this new market where everybody's got 50% or 60% or, you know, it's really a fight between Apple and Google. But I think that number one is I think that Apple doesn't need to have that to be very, very profitable. Number two is I still think there's a lot of issues with Google. I mean, not Google, but with Android that are about to flesh themselves out. I think that, you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to call everything that's an Android for much longer. You know, look at what Samsung's doing and what Amazon's doing and everything else. You know, Android may cease to be really a singular operating system that we can call
the Chinese
a majority.
Especially.
Yeah, it's, I don't think that, you know.
Whenever you hear all those columns and reports saying, oh, Apple's doomed, look how Android is gaining in market share and now overwhelming. Well, no, it's sort of like if you have one sensor chip that is in every toaster and every coffee pot and every car. That doesn't. There are so many people who are Android users who don't know or care that they're Android users. Where Android does not enhance the experience in any way, shape, or form.
And when you look at the anti-theft stuff that I'm sure we talked about last week, but the whole anti-theft thing, where it turns out that Verizon and AT&T and everyone else, they just turned that off. You know, on the Android one, they're like, man, we're not going to do that. And Apple,
the kill switch.
Okay.
Which they didn't want a kill switch. Why didn't they want a kill switch?
Because they sell insurance against having your phone stolen. You know. They it would be big financial problems.
The insurance gives you a new phone. The kill switch doesn't help that. It just keeps your data safe. I don't know.
But it takes all.
I didn't understand that
because if everybody had a kill switch, it wouldn't. You know,
you still need a new phone.
But stealing phones.
Not as many people would steal them.
Not as many.
So they want to encourage theft.
It's not that they want to encourage it. They just want to leverage it.
They don't want to discourage it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not.
They want to monetize it is what they want to do without actually stealing phones themselves.
Yeah. Alex, back on the market share thing, there's an unwiredview.com article about the iPhone 5C generating some real traction in India. Is that important?
No, I think absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, generating, you know, the emerging world is the growth market for everybody.
Does that show price sensitivity, that even $100 less means it's enough of a cut to make it desirable?
If that's why. I mean, you know, it could be a variety of reasons.
Well, maybe they like the color phone.
Maybe culturally it might make more sense, you know, in different areas, in different parts of the world to have that. So
my understanding is both a lot of Android manufacturers and Nokia are targeting what they call the next billion customers, which are people going to a phone for the first time or to a smartphone for the first time. And for them, price is really one of the most important features. And so far, Apple has no interest in that because it's not a valuable customer base for them. They'd much rather be the second or third or fourth phone when someone is mature in the market and they want a better experience, according to them, or a more premium product. And, you know, that worked well for them in computers. And the thinking is that, you know, in the iPod, they had 70% market shares. They had to start competing against themselves. And phones are probably not going to get anywhere near that. So their primary concern is to maintain the most profitable segment of that market.
Well, and there's a profitable segment in all these markets. I mean, when I was in Rwanda, I mean, you know, everybody's got some kind of smartphone. I mean, these are all like ambassadors and leaders and stuff like that, but they're all on their iPads, and they have iPads and Android
phones.
It's
a status product.
I mean, but it was like Android phones and iPads. Yeah. You know, those are that was kind of the mix that you saw pretty commonly. But there's a lot of people there in any one of these countries that are buying Mercedes, they're buying high-end phones, right. They're buying, you know, all those things. And that's in every culture. So there's definitely a market.
But it's the 1% or less or fewer.
Yeah.
Or the second or third time buyer.
Right. This is why Windows Phone, by the way, is doing very well in India and other places, is because Nokia has some very credible low-end phones running Windows Phone. They're good smartphones, and they're less expensive. And they're doing quite well in those markets, which is a smart move for Microsoft and Nokia.
Those are Nokia phones?
Yeah, they're Nokia. They're inexpensive Nokia. They're good inexpensive Nokia phones.
But is that
Nokia
that Asha
phones thing,
or is it
Well, Asha's one, but...
520?
Lumia, yeah, the 520 is what? How much is the 520 unsubsidized?
I think it's $100.
It's cheap.
Yep.
Yeah,
and that's a real and that's a genuine smartphone. I mean, I think, you know, in that marketplace, they're not saying, "Oh, well, you don't have Instagram," or the truth
they do
is,
now.
They do now. So even if they were, that's,
well, there you go.
Right.
Motorola is offering the Moto G for $179.
It remains to be seen how profitable these will be for them, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's one of the reasons Microsoft bought Nokia, because they. They realize that this is a way to get into some of those markets.
But it's not an either or thing. They're all good markets. I mean these are all good. I mean the low end market there's a lot of revenue to be had there. It's not whether Apple should or shouldn't, or whether that's a good market or not. It's whether it's a market that Apple should go into.
Right.
You know, they just aren't maybe not built for that. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, as a, like for instance, we're a production company. There's a lot of productions I can do, and there's certain ones I just can't do anymore. Yeah, you know, that I used to be able to.
Web 7809 in the chat room says the reason that his wife got a 5C is because she plans to drop it a lot, and she thought that would be more robust.
So if the 5C had everything that the 5S had,
it would outsell the 5S.
I would buy the 5C.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
a 5.
I don't like this the you know, all the hard surfaces. I like it to be soft, right. 'Cause I drop it a lot.
I actually played with a 5C on Sunday. We had a woman from Apple who actually does the materials for the 5C. And she, of course, carried a 5C, and it feels nice.
Yeah, it's a really nice phone.
It's a nice phone. Great.
It's a lot of fun, too.
Yep.
It's a fun phone.
It feels like enameled metal. It doesn't feel like, you know, chintzy paper.
No, it's not.
It's not Samsung. It's Apple plastic, or it's Nokia plastic. It's not Samsung plastic.
It feels light, too. It feels light.
I didn't realize those were separate varieties, Andy.
No, they really are. Like, if you listen to Nokia or Apple engineers talk, they've spent a lot of time and a lot of like bottomless pits of money making really good materials. It's part of their process.
So I've been Scroogled already. I searched for a hearing aid how long ago? 10 minutes ago. Uh-huh. And I'm seeing ads for hearing aids now on my...
You can't escape.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, Leo, is that like Android can sell you that cheap Motorola and make a lot of money off the phone after you bought it, which is not an option for Apple yet.
Right.
I bet when you log into Facebook, you'll get the same ad, though, Leo. Somehow Facebook will
I don't think so. Movement. I bet not. This is a Google ad. I don't know. That's a good question. Facebook's never seemed to give me ads that are of any use at all.
Oh, you said it's always because you don't spend any time in Facebook. Incontinence properties and things.
Okay, what? They're trying to sell me a car.
A camera.
And a camera. Digital photography colleges.
Oh, handsome.
No, not a camera. It says you should pursue a career as a pro photographer. I can earn my degree online.
Leo, I've often thought that. I thought that, you know,
I think
you should
they're right. They must have looked at my pictures on Facebook and said, "Man, you're good."
See, my problem is that I buy things so quickly that I get ads for things that I already purchased. I'm like, okay, you don't need to talk about this anymore. Like, you know,
I was selling a bunch of stuff on Amazon, and then all I got was, because I was searching for the prices, all I get is ads for stuff I'm trying to sell.
Yeah, exactly.
It's completely worthless.
Amazon's funny because it's their recommendation engine always tells me, "Oh, you would like something I've already bought."
Yeah.
No, that's the you can go into your account settings and actually say, "Please forget that I ever searched for this," and it will remove it. But also, that's exactly the thing when we're talking about like invasion of privacy. It's like, you know, the corporations, they learn too much about it. Ooh, there's a new David Bowie album out now.
Well, my complaint, I have to admit, my complaint
Thank
isn't
you, Amazon.
My complaint isn't that Google's doing it; it's just they're not doing it very well.
Yeah, they're doing it badly.
I mean, if they were actually able to think about that a little more,
I searched for hearing aids, so it seems sensible. In fact, I went to HearingPlanet.com, right? So that's why I'm seeing a Hearing Planet ad. I mean, that seems sensible.
Yeah,
yeah. No, without getting into an Android rat hole, I've been noticing things that they've been adding to Google now. that I'm used to the idea where I needed to go someplace last night. I happen to do like a quick Google map search like on my desktop for it in the morning. Okay, there it is in Google now. There's the map. There's a location. Easy to transfer. What I did not notice that they added something where, oh, you were reading this website. Do you realize that that website got updated in the last 2 days ago? Here's the fresh look at the contents of this page you spent so much time looking at.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. All righty then. Thank you. Thomas Kermudgeon. Very good.
I'm also getting a lot of ads for Coin, which I've talked a lot about how bad Coin is, but they seem to think I should buy one anyway. So here's the story that I was looking at. Apple posts its Black Friday teaser. They did it first in Australia, which is a little odd because I don't think Australia celebrates Thanksgiving, but apparently the day after Thanksgiving is still, an international shopping day.
Apple does it everywhere. They do one sale a year everywhere.
This is it. And the story by the very well-named Buster Heine. Is that his is that his real name? Come on.
Come on, man.
He must have a hard time on April Fool's Day. Nobody believes any of his posts.
can I say hypothetically that there are two PR people that email me regularly that I'm at least 82% sure you picked that name just to make it stand out inside inside an email? That's either a porn name or a very, very unfortunate mistranslation or something.
If his parents named him Buster Heine, I just don't know what to say. Anyway, enough of that. So what is Apple going to do? Traditionally, they don't do the biggest discounts ever. This is the only time they have sales.
You can get 5% off.
Yeah, yeah.
$100 off a laptop.
That's typical. MacBook Pro is $101. MacBook Air is $101. iPad 4, $61.
Last year, not this year.
Oh, is this last year? Oh, you're right. Yeah. That's right.
That's probably representative kind of thing.
5% off.
But it would be nice if they surprised us.
Well, that can be more than 5.
Yeah.
If that's $101 off of even last year's prices, it's not bad.
Yeah, that's right. These are last year's.
It's not elbow a parent of three in the face at 4 a.m. on Thanksgiving morning. Good discount. But still, it's a discount.
Black Friday, ironically, at least certainly on the online world, is nonsensical. Every day is Black Friday. That makes no sense. The only time anymore it seems to me Black Friday makes sense is if you are in the physical brick and mortar world and you want to get in line at 3 a.m. at Walmart to get a $19 television set. I mean, really, seriously, right? I mean,
those people, I don't understand.
Who cares about
Black
Friday? If you
really want to buy from an Apple store, this is the only time you can do that and get a sale price. This is what's once a year for them.
Right. This is it. So it's good to know.
Yeah. And it'll take a long time.
But you don't have to wait in line. And it's not great deals anyway.
No.
Have the sharp stick, though.
Well, I mean, I'll take it. $100. Yeah, why not?
And you'll need a sharp stick on Black Friday.
Yes. Yes, you will.
Especially if Andy's elbowing you in the face.
Sharp sticks?
Yes.
They sell them at a discount at Walmart.
I heard Ace Hardware.
Gotta get there early, though.
Get them at Walmart and then go to Target. That's their plan.
And they sell the sharp sticks on Thursday.
I didn't read this post, but Eric Schmidt apparently posted something on Google Plus on how to convert to Android from iPhone.
His iPhone friends are switching to Android, Leo. Never mind that he's been using a BlackBerry. His iPhone friends are switching to Android. He didn't write the BlackBerry switcher's guide, which would have been really nice of him, but he didn't.
I thought this was really interesting. And so basically he just walks through, here's the kind of stuff you need to do and back it up, and here's how you move your contacts, and here's how you do this, that, and the other thing. What was fascinating to me was how adult the comments were. There's, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. I probably read 50. And either somebody was really moderating them or it is a sign of how good Google Plus comments are, because at least half of them were people saying, oh, yeah, this really helps. This is a great idea and everything. And the other half were people saying, well, I've got a lot of friends who tried to switch and they've actually switched back to the iPhone. It was really measured and interesting dialogue going on there.
Well, that's kind of Google Plus.
Yeah.
Well, the best social network for you to stay in touch with your friends who work at Google.
and it's also
thank unclear. You. I think I stole that from nice case.
And you wonder why no PR people like you, Leo.
Next, I'm on their list. Do you think Eric wrote
Tyler Moore of this industry?
No, he likes me.
Do you think Eric wrote this himself?
No.
One reason I think not is this line in the very first paragraph. They are a great Christmas present to an iPhone user! I don't see Eric Schmidt using an exclamation mark here.
No.
It was suggested he did not write that.
But suggested by whom?
It's been suggested by various people on the internet that he did not write that.
Well, I want a syntactic analysis. Can we get Watson to work on this?
I'll send you a link.
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't say someone, what are these? I'm going to post this. And having somebody else, you know.
Yeah, just had someone do it for him.
Yeah, and probably talked about it, looked at it, you know, that kind of thing.
I need a memo from my iPhone friends. They're all switching to Android. Help
kind
me.
Of odd that he put the line in, if you're using AT&T, download the visual voicemail app from the Play Store. That seems like an odd. First of all, it comes on all AT&T phones, Eric. So no need to download.
But not if you bought a Nexus 5.
Oh, right. So this is aimed at Nexus 5 users, among others. Okay.
It did get them a lot of press.
Yeah, got a ton of press.
It's a good article, though. Yeah, I mean, it's a good article.
It's the kind of thing we would have written. I mean, it's very how-to, helping how-to.
Either way, Google gets all your information. It's win-win for him.
Scroggled!
No, it really is. It really is win-win for him. They make as much money, if not more, from iOS users than Android users.
They can't lose.
Yeah.
You know what they don't make money from? BlackBerry users. Eric.
And they have
or Windows users because they don't make very
and they're
many
almost done with them.
It's so funny that the YouTube snafu over the Windows phone is just bizarre. And by the way, the Xbox One ships with a very nice YouTube app on it. It's a great way to watch YouTube. It's weird.
Leo, one of the things in there that was kind of strange, Fushigi reminded me of it. He says to download the visual voicemail app from AT&T, I think.
No, he says from the Android store, from the App Store. He says it right.
Does he?
Unless this was a fix later, he says to download it from the App Store.
That's the weird thing. The Play Store is filled with carrier-specific apps that every time I try a new device and I sync it from my old account, it's like, okay, so now I've got Verizon's special navigator, and I've got Sprint's special voice dialer, and I've got...
Again, this is what I'm talking about, where we're going to get... We're moving slowly towards everybody having their own version of Android to a point where it's just different OSs.
It's
you know,
better Linux.
You know, it's... Tower of Babel.
The good news is, in my opinion, the best Android phones are the Google Experience phones.
Yeah.
The Nexus 5 is fabulous. I love my Moto X, which just got KitKat. I think you're crazy to buy a phone from Samsung at this point. It's so junked up. It really put me off Android. Yeah. Put me off Samsung. It really did.
There's a next week, I'm finishing, hopefully I'll have it finished the next day or two, but I've decided there's so many really interesting phones released this year that next Monday I'm running a phone of the year competition.
Oh,
which I'm naming one. But the thing is, what you're saying about Samsung is exactly right. There are a couple of features I really like about Samsung phones, but now, boy, the other hardware makers are doing so much better work than Samsung and specific handsets that you have to have. There are a couple of good reasons to get a Samsung device, but now you need a reason to get a Samsung
device. If I could get a Google Edition Note 3 or something like that, I might, but because I like the Note. But
I wonder how much that is geeks, because like a lot of people buy Samsung phones. A lot of them might not even know they're Android phones. They just buy Samsung phones. And it's in Samsung's best interest to make
sure
their phones look the same and other people's look different so that you'll be more inclined to stick with Samsung.
That's exactly what Alex is saying, isn't it? Yeah. That it isn't about Android anymore. It's Samsung versus HTC.
Their competition is other Android.
Yeah, they want to distinguish themselves. Amazon has distinguished itself. Samsung's distinguishing themselves. I mean, some people are just limited because they don't want to give away certain features, but I think we're seeing with Samsung and Amazon specifically, we're seeing a concerted effort to tweak something so that it looks exactly like their environment and not necessarily the Android environment. They don't want it to be the Android environment. They want it to be the Samsung environment.
That's really leveraging the difference between Android and iOS. iOS's strength is consistency, that you have one philosophy and one expression of what a phone should be. The great thing about Android is that you can have a company like Amazon say, no, we really think the experience should be optimized towards this sort of feature.
And I'm saying, I think it's great. I think that the one thing that we need to think about is when do we stop saying, when we talk about like market penetration, when do we stop saying Apple and Android and start saying Apple, Google, Android, Samsung,
I think we've
already
started
exactly. I think it's an irrelevant. It's almost an irrelevant discussion anyway. If you are concerned about labeling winners and losers, okay, good for you. If you are a market analyst, nothing that you say needs to be provably right or wrong anyway. So I don't know why you even care about accuracy. I just like the fact that there are so many great choices for people, including a wonderful iPhone, wonderful Android devices, and now, good God, wonderful Windows Phone devices. Yes. What world am I living in right now? In which I'm putting a Windows Phone back in the box. I'm afraid to ship it back, saying, Bye, Windows Phone. Come back soon. I like you.
And to Alex's point, I mean, Samsung had their own developers conference a month ago. It wasn't an Android developers conference. It was specifically for Samsung, you know, SDK and Samsung APIs. You know, how far does that, is that going to go?
And the question is when do you end up with consumer confusion when people don't understand why they can't download one thing or another? I mean, you're really going to have to have completely separate app stores.
They have their own app store.
They do. I'm just saying, but yeah. it'll be something you can't go to Google Play because
well, and that's what Google's fighting, frankly, with its Nexus program and its Motorola. And I think Motorola is going to be a tool in that too. Yep. Although they have to be judicious there because Motorola is an OEM.
Right. I do think that's overstated though. Because, again, I try at least one new Android phone every month. And, again, usually I start off by just resyncing to, like, my reference account.
So nice, isn't
and,
it? Boy, is
exactly.
That
and, like, oh. I'll try it stock the way it comes out of the box. But once I say, okay, make this phone look like my own Android phone, doesn't matter what make or model it is. It will have my launcher. It will have my keyboard. It will have my desktop wallpaper. It will have all the little enhancements that are Google Play store standard. So it's cool that you can actually choose your own software experience and choose your own hardware experience. I don't think there's a whole lot of you need to have an HTC phone to make this work, or you need to have a Samsung phone to make this work.
That's the thing that's Google so smart is that they're taking back ownership not by making their own phone only, but by making so many things tied to Google Play services that it behooves you to use those things, and the value lives in there.
That's such a big deal now that they've released things like okay, we will now release the Google Experience keyboard, so that now every single app, every single device can use it. They're basically saying we've tried this idea where we let manufacturers do whatever they want with Android. That didn't work out great for us, so we're going to make sure that we can make even the crappiest blister pack cheapo Android phone have like actual good interface and actual usability.
I just got the Kindle Fire HDX, the 8.9-inch. It's very impressive, by the way.
It's great.
Yeah, it's RGB.
Screen than the iPad Air. It's lighter than the iPad. It's 16:9, which always is a little weird. And it is it's Android, but not really, because it's got the Amazon. Although the Amazon's got...
It's Mojito, Leo.
It's got Fire OS.
Fire OS 3. Has gotten 1. Better and better and better, I have to say. I didn't like it all Codename that much Mojito. At first. Mojito is
so,
better.
Leo, I know the specs on the HDX are better than the iPad Air. When you're actually using it, is it something that you notice, or is it just spec-wise you're thinking?
You can notice it if you pay attention to it. It's specs. But I immediately noticed what a good-looking screen it is. I mean, it really is a good-looking screen.
That technology, unfortunately, is small batch still. You can't make 100 million of those screens. But Amazon, you know, to their advantage, is you're making them for the ones that they can have.
And it's still a consumption device. It's not, you know, much more than the iPad is. It's just, it really is a door into Amazon. But I loved it. Like, all my Audible book, you know, it comes, you know, Leo's Kindle.
Right.
Leo's seventh Kindle, it said. And it... And that's, by the way, it's far more than that. But that's what they gave it the name of. And then it has all my Audible books. The library is not downloaded, but the library is there. There's an audiobooks tab, and it's there.
Right.
All my Amazon stuff, there.
Does it do anything you can't do with your iPad?
Yes. There's mostly in the content area of it. They've got the X-ray feature that is marvelous for watching video.
And the Mayday thing where you can meet chicks. That's cool.
You can call Leo.
What is the X-ray thing, Andy?
Well, like you're watching, how many times have you been watching a movie or TV show and you're wondering, oh, that's a good song I want to buy, or I wonder who wrote that. Or you see somebody in an old movie and say, wait, was that guy in this other movie too? With X-ray, the movie will still play, but if you tap this button, there'll be an overlay that will tell you, oh, the song that's playing right now, here's the title, here's the artist, if you want to buy it, go here. And
so you don't need to flip over to IMDb then?
You don't need to do it. And the cool thing is that you will actually have, like, it's almost like a role-playing game, in that every time a new character enters the scene, a little thumbnail of that character appears. Here's the person's name, here's the actor who's playing it, tap that button, it will show you, here are the other movies, kind of like that. Well, not only that, but it's connected to IMDb. So again, if you want this content, it will also give you trivia that goes shot for shot by shot. It's not quite as good as saying, okay, now take a look at that red drum in the background, because that was also like in a previous scene that's supposed to have happened 50 years ago in a different country. It's not as good, not quite as good as that, but
it's not Andy sitting next to you.
But which is an answer a little bit to what you were talking about with this Android bifurcation of Android,
right,
is that I think really ultimately what's happening is we're living in ecosystems. So this is for the Amazon ecosystem,
right,
liver. Mm-hmm. iPad is for the Apple ecosystem.
Yep.
Samsung is really for the Samsung ecosystem. And I think Samsung and these other companies aren't as good as ecosystems as Apple is, as Google is, and as Amazon is. Yeah. So I think ultimately it's going to come down to people who can create a good ecosystem. And because I watch, I mostly buy movies on Amazon because it works on a broad variety, including the iPad, of devices that I use.
Right.
So all my like when I bought The Sopranos, I could have bought it in various places, but I bought it on Amazon because I would be able to watch it in the most places, including now.
Right. And I buy it on iTunes because most of my stuff is that I'm using on a day-to-day basis.
But iTunes feels constricting because I can't do it on my Roku. I can't do it on my Chromecast. I can't do it on my TV, which has many of my TVs are smart TVs.
Right.
I can't do it on my Kindle. But I can't. So in other words, it's only Apple.
Right.
Right. And so to me, that makes the decision a little bit.
And for some people, that's problematic.
And Amazon, I use Amazon Music. My whole library is on Amazon Music. It's very nice. My library is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like developing on Flash versus developing on Xcode, where one is horizontal and one is vertical. You can buy stuff vertically on iTunes or horizontally on Amazon, but both are a lock-in. You're locked into Amazon, and if one day they have a big disagreement with a certain vendor and pull content or get pushed off, you're still as liable. But for right now, if you have a lot of devices, it makes a lot of sense.
Somebody in the chat room said they like the immersion reading on the Kindle, but now Android KitKat has immersion reading as well. So that's where all the controls go away, your full screen.
Mm. I like the listening reading.
I have to say the HDX is really nice.
Yeah.
I liked the first Fire, but I wasn't it had issues that kept me from saying this is a goodbye. I'm changing my attitude on this thing. This is a
still
really
mostly
nice
US tablet. Only though, sadly.
Yeah, it's only available in two countries and
yeah.
All right, let's do our picks of the week. I think we're ready to wrap this up, and since Allison is our guest of the week, let's let you start from NozillaCast, Allison Sheridan.
All right, so I know you like to keep things really crisp and short here, Leo, but
No, that's so untrue. Go ahead. So much so that I believe you're being sarcastic, yes.
It's possible. It's possible. Yes. I have two picks. The first one I want to do is a hardware pick. So Steve bought me the iPod, the new iPhone dock. Let's see if I can get that up where anybody can see it. It's a nice little dock. It's only $29. Except it doesn't come with the lightning cable, which means you have to buy a $20 lightning cable. So when you're done with this thing, it's about $30, and you have to take your phone out of the case to stick it in here. And when you put it in, it stands almost perfectly straight up. Oh, he's getting ahead of me. So what I got next was the Sudoku. Let's see, am I pronouncing it correct? Sudoku from RadTech. And this allows you to put your iPhone into the dock in a case.
Lying down.
Not a giant. Yeah. And it's also lying down, which is really nice because you can actually tap on it and play with it when it's in the dock.
Mm.
And it's got really sticky little feet on the bottom, so it stays still.
So do
you
I.
Wanna yank,
oh, I'm sorry.
So when you want to yank your phone out, you can yank it out. So it's $50, but the other one is 30 plus 20, which I think is 50 again when you're done.
Okay.
So I'm really happy with it. And it uses a micro USB cable that actually comes with it.
Wow.
So I really like this case or this dock. And like I said, you can yank the phone out and it doesn't pull it off your desk.
That's nice. So it uses a micro USB, but it has a lightning in the case itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I have the Apple case, the Product Red case, and it fits in there just fine. If you have a, giant case, it's not going to fit in there. But, a moderate case, it still will fit.
Oh, look, and you can take the rubber out.
Yeah, so there they're showing it to you.
What's the rubber for? Case. Just so it could just sit, is that?
That's if you don't have a case.
Oh, I see. The rubber takes the place of a case. I get it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's nicely done.
It's a beautiful
tech.
Yeah, RadTech. Very definitely cool. So my software pick is, I got to put a disclaimer on it. I actually advertise for these guys, but they are not paying me right now to do it. The audience of MacBreak Weekly and most Twitch shows are really sophisticated users. So I'm guessing all of you help other people with their computers, with their Macs, with their PCs, whatever it is. You're always helping them, and you're having to answer the same questions over and over and over again. The software I'm in love with is called Clarify from clarify-it.com, and it's a tool that lets you take a bunch of screenshots really quickly, throw in some annotations. You can put little sequence numbers in, arrows, text, put some text around it, and then publish it either to the web or to create a PDF or throw it into Evernote, and it allows you to send instructions to people, keep them, and make sure that you only answer every tech question once. I am crazy about this. I've got tons of
So when people ask you tech questions, you send them screenshots. You're very nice.
Well, yeah. Well, I do. And the thing is, a lot of times I'll do it for myself, and then somebody else asks me for it.
Yeah.
So I save a lot of time by doing it.
Now, I use Sketch right now, which is the free Evernote tool. Yeah, How does it compare to Sketch?
Sketch is just a single screenshot.
Right.
This allows you to create a little tutorial. If you go to podfeet.com in the menu bar, there's a link to tutorials. And every single one of those I've created with Sketch or their other product Screen Steps. There's a Mac version, there's a Windows version, and there's a Sliders version of the software. So if you go back and forth, you can have both. But it's a bunch of steps. It's for more complex things. Sometimes I'll use Sketch to just, you know, throw a single screenshot up. But it also, you can store them all in Evernote. So tutorials for yourself. So things I forget, I'll often just throw them up in Evernote. So yeah, if you see there's a tutorial tab there, right under where it says Mac up there, right there. All of those I've created using Screen Steps or Clarify, depending on which tool I was using at the time.
That's cool.
Not How to Wax a Car, not that one. That I knew you'd click on that one.
How to Wax a Car. All right.
Screenshots.
Yeah.
So I might have to buy it. How much is Clarify?
I knew you'd ask me that. I think it's 40.
Is it on the App Store or is it
Clarify? Well, there's an App Store version, but I wouldn't encourage you to do that right now because they're about to come out with a new version. And since Apple doesn't allow you to upgrade pricing, I would buy it from clarify-it.com right now or wait till Clarify 3 comes out. It's going to be a pretty major upgrade.
This is such a problem with the App Store because I like to buy on the App Store because it's so easy to set up a new computer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so maybe I'll wait until version 3. Is that imminent?
Yeah, it's pretty soon. They haven't given a date on it yet, but it's good. We brought clarify-it.com down.
We did. We killed the site. Maybe we want to tell them about Squarespace.
Squarespace.com.
Andy and Akko, thank you, Allison. Great picks. I'm going to buy the Clarify. That looks really good. Yeah. And I want to get the RadTech. So there, you got both sold.
There you go.
What do you got, Andy?
My pick is something I think you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, but I got my pre-release copy like just last week. It is the massive cool tools.
Isn't this awesome?
This is like there. It's, you know, here's my mail sorting procedure. Like I'll come home or I'll come downstairs for the first time. I'll see a couple of packages on my doorstep and I'll just do a quick triage and put them someplace. This one, I didn't know what was in the package. So I opened it up and I saw this. Oh, that's right. They were going to send me this one. And 20 minutes later, I was still at my front step in my socks and my pajamas with the door open because I was looking at so many things. This is just a compendium of highly recommended individual products, ideas, tools, services, and things that have been recommended on that really great cool tools site, kk.org, on Kevin Kelly's site. And it's the most browsable physical object. I took it up because I knew, you know, I was going to be using this as a pick of the week. And, you know, while Allison was talking, I was like flipping through, and every single page I get to, I was stopping and like reading some more because here are two pages on like camping and like travel stuff. And I'm like, wow, here's a really cool like $40 like travel sheet that, you know, that's like sort of like a portable sleeping bag that packs into a small container. Oh wow, so I've never thought about actually having parachute cord, and here's a little article explaining why parachute cord is much more interesting, and wow, here's I didn't know that they make like these little tents tents that you put on the top of your car and turn your car into a camper.
It's really the whole Earth catalog back again.
Exactly.
What are the QR codes to?
The QR code, like, instead of typing in the URL to where do you go to buy this or learn more about this, there's just a QR code.
Raising Rabbits book.
Do you have the natural goat care book?
No.
Did you know this is a good rear end and udder? This is a cow hocks and divided udder.
I didn't know
this
that.
This is a well attached scrotum, and this is a poorly attached scrotum, pendulous and uneven. That is something you don't learn these days in the modern world. How about cloning your own mineral water?
Right. It's not all things to buy. It's also, here's a technique that really, really works for splitting wood. And here's
so
and
so
it, this cool. is all this about- is what I the best recommendation I can give for this is that
I have
you, I remember like as a little kid when it's the holidays and you're being dragged to like relatives' houses and you don't really know them and but your parents know these people very very well so you're stuck here for 4.5 hours and they don't have a game console, they don't have any other kids to play with.
Give
so you start
book.
Like okay they've got Reader's Digest, I guess I'll sort of like look at the jokes. If this had been like on the coffee table in one of those houses, they would have had to drag me away from that house because it was just nothing but page after page of things I'd never heard of but became immensely fascinating.
This is a very expensive book. I don't mean that it's expensive. It's not expensive to buy. It's expensive to own.
Yeah.
This would be
I
like
want to buy all, the Whirly Pop. Are,
that Whirly Pop is awesome.
These are
I have
all
it.
These are all color pages. It's $40. I think I checked on the official link. It's an Amazon link, and it's on pre-order, and I believe it'll ship very very soon. But
this would be the best Christmas present for everybody in your family. Ever.
So I have a lot of things
I'm so
in there.
Serious. You will come if you give that. This to someone at the start of the Christmas party, I guarantee you it will never be closed and put away for the rest of the Christmas party because someone is going to be again, it's like the Sarlacc pit of interesting articles. It's like you think you're getting a little bit closer, but then you'll get drawn right into it and you will never escape it.
There's something on every page I want
to
buy.
In the bathroom with an iPhone is expensive.
So we're going to Kevin Kelly self-publish this. That's what's so amazing about it. I think mentioned that's
amazing, right? This does not look like a self-published project.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I like it when I open a book and I smell the ink, the color ink. It's fabulous.
You smell the container ship.
This is something everybody should
like
immediately
that stand
get.
Out more now because we're so used to not having them.
Right.
It's the random access that you really like because on the web you can find whatever you think of and you search for. It's really really hard to find something.
Serendipity.
By accident. Yeah. And this is right. This is like hundreds of pages of serendipitous discoveries.
Hose connectors.
With QR codes.
Soil testers. Brome squirrel buster bird feeder. Yeah, bust those squirrels. Yeah. I literally, every page, there's something I want to buy. So Kevin's going to join us on a triangulation in a few, probably sometime early next year to talk about this. But I agree with you, Andy. And what a good gift this would be.
Yes.
The gift that keeps on taking.
Yeah, exactly.
Or better yet, like buy a copy for yourself and use that as like a feeder
that's
for
your secret
ideas
weapon.
For the next 5 years, right? Well, this is the perfect gadget because I'm always calling artichokes and I'm always complaining. How did you find this perfect tool for it? It's like, well, you know, I pay attention to you and your needs, and I asked around the artichoke culling community, and
I just feel like this is Kevin Kelly's masterwork. He's
this
done
is like
so many great things.
This
in
is
the
like
world.
The curated SkyMall.
Yeah,
like the one that wasn't just someone paying to be in there. It's like stuff where it's not kooky. It's just
if he never did anything ever else again,
he may not have to
make him the Hammurabi.
His contribution to society and culture.
Now, here's the question: does the QR code take you to Amazon and give him 4% back? If I did it,
it doesn't say. It just says the QR code is a hyperlink. I don't know. I have to scan some.
I think I scanned a couple, and it took me to like the official, like the canonical product site for it.
I hope he gets a back end on it.
Well, he's getting. Yeah, I mean, $40 probably just barely covering the cost of this. This is a beautiful, full color.
As a business model, that would be excellent.
But this is the Whole Earth catalog, but only in four colors and beautiful. And I think Kevin Kelly is one of the most lovable people in the world. I just
it's
adore
the whole
deep him.
Catalog.
Yeah.
Yes.
And by the way, done on a Mac G5. So, how about that?
That's cool.
Huh? Yeah. Wow.
How retro.
A source for Amish clothing.
Well, Kevin does.
Right,
you know, I've always wondered. He has that Amish beard thing
going
on.
It sounds like we have an Amish show coming now that we know where to get the clothes. I've thought that we should have an Amish Mac show.
No more zippers.
The only problem is
there is something wrong with that, isn't
it?
There's something missing in that comment. But,
so cool.
Oh, right. They wouldn't have any Macs. Although, if you know, it turns out if you're Amish, you can have a cell phone if you're on a skitter. In case you're wondering.
Many of the QR codes in this book refer to Amazon because almost everything is available on Amazon. And he is using Amazon.
Well played.
Referral codes.
So. And I would hope he would.
Yeah.
You know, that's like,
costs
you know,
us nothing.
But we went through all the trouble of figuring that thing out. I hope he's. I'd be happy to make sure
Get
that
his.
I.
That's good.
That's a great idea.
So use the QR code.
He could become quite wealthy if you all do that.
Yes.
Use the QR code.
Don't just search in Amazon for it. Use the QR code.
Everyone buys the yacht on page 37, he'll be a millionaire.
Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I, as you may know, I travel a lot.
What?
Well, I know, you know, it's hard to believe, but I spent a lot of time on a flight. And I just wanted to point out that, are you in Star Alliance or are you on?
I am a Star Alliance card carrier.
Who do you, mostly fly on?
Mostly United.
Have you used the United app?
Yeah, of course.
It is awesome.
It's very good.
Like, so I just want to show it off because it's what everyone...
Yeah, it's Passbook though, right?
No. There's the United app.
Oh, okay.
So there's the application that United came out with. It's just that all the other airlines, you know, shame on you.
Everybody
you
has an app.
I know, but this one works so well. And I have to admit, so I can go in here and I
wow,
I have,
it's prettier than I thought.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. It just got updated and it
Brian,
is...
Brian, do we have an over-the-shoulder? He's working on it, I think, for you. Yeah. Alex looks over.
You need a little PTZ.
What? Is mine? I'll show it.
I put a little post-it over my thing.
Just show it, and I'll show it.
So anyway, so the so
if you're a smart boy. Look at that. It's good. I'll just put my thumb there.
Yeah,
too.
There we go. So anyway, so then if you click on that
tip, welcome back, Alexander.
Yeah, yeah. And then
okay.
So here's the thing about it is that you can what's kind of cool about it is. You know, I can look at my flights. I can check in.
Jiminy Christmas! You got a quarter million miles in here.
Oh, that's just this year.
You're a premier 1K traveler.
So anyway,
they can't really see any of that because it's so bright.
Anyway, but the thing is I can look at it. I can request upgrades. I can move my seats. I can change flights. So you can really do everything that you would do. You know, that you would call someone for.
Airport maps. That's cool.
I mean, it's really. I mean, they really went like, okay, we're going to not just do something where you kind of check in or do something basic. We're really going to give you all the tools you need to to actually. Interact with United. And anyway, so it's...
And you even can have your boarding passes.
Those are my boarding passes. I don't know if there's any... There's probably not any there right now.
Here, yeah.
But but the...
That's cool.
But yeah, you can have all your boarding passes in there. And so you... I send them the Passbook from here out of habit. But the reality is I now just use the app most of the time instead of Passbook because it's, it's just easier and
so this
get
is
more
not,
detail.
They do have a Passbook app, but this is not that.
No, so you can send it from this app to
the Passbook.
To the Passbook. It'll let you do that really easily. But this is so good; it's actually so much better than Passbook that you don't bother. You just when that little piece is there, you hit the little plus sign. It gets bigger. It's got all the information. It's
I have it on my phone because I have I have all the Passbook apps.
Yeah.
So this is the one I'm sure United offers to go with Passbook.
It is, but it's...
But that's the one.
But that's,
you don't
use
Passbook is what you're saying. You don't need it.
You don't need it. You just use the app, the United one. So it's a great... Yeah, there you go. You can see a lot of... And you can see all the... You can buy tickets. You can... And the interface, it's not just that you can do it. It's that you can do it easily. And it's really well done. And it's just... anyway, that's all.
Anyway, that's it.
It was great.
I'm done. That's all you need.
That's all I got to say.
All right. United Airlines app. And finally, Renee Ritchie and your pick of the week, sir.
I've got two as well, one software, one hardware. The first is Procreate version 2 shipped yesterday.
Procreation. Oh, no,
well,
that's not
art
where
you... app. This is a drawing and painting app for the iPad made by Savage Interactive. It is my favorite pro drawing app on the iPad. It's just fantastic. They have layers, brushes, opacity. If you like, I mean, paper is a good app, but you have almost no control over the various elements. This is a full-fledged artistic suite that lets you do pretty much, you can see from the examples, pretty much anything that you can imagine. And it's got 64-bit support now, 4K canvas support. It's got a whole bunch of new...
It's got layers.
Layers, GPU-accelerated filters now. It's got an iOS 7 redesign. Everyone I know who just loves to do art on an iPad absolutely loves... Yeah, and it won an Apple Design Award. The guys at Savage Interactive, very well deserved.
They also make a pen to go with it, Pogo.
Well, it supports all the Bluetooth 4.0 styluses, which is the only way to do pressure sensitivity on the iPad now is to have Bluetooth 4.0.
And does that Bluetooth actually work?
Ish. I mean, if you're used to a Wacom, it is not the same thing. Because I spent years on a Wacom. Sir, this is no Wacom. But if you're used to an iPad stylus, it does give you more possibilities than the usual dumb iPad styluses do.
Some of the images that they have from it are amazing.
Unbelievable. And it works really well.
Wow. Procreate, how much?
It's $6. I believe it's $5.99, but the update is free. If you have Procreate 1, for some reason, which I still am upset about, they did not charge for the update.
They should.
Even though I would have paid $40 for the update.
That's a good deal, because if you want to get, even if you are using, whatchamacallit, the other one you mentioned.
Paper.
It's like $8 or $9 to get all the tools. So this is a good deal.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is the best money I've ever spent on art supplies in my life. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Less than the cost of a single chalk pencil box. Wow. And it's at procreate.si if you want to know more.
Yeah, and available on the App Store. It's iPad only, but you'd really want... And it makes the iPad Air a phenomenal artistic tool.
$5.99. Neato. I can't draw it. I'm going to still buy it.
The other one I wanted to mention was...
I do. Buy
everything. Pad and Quill makes these, you know, hipster moleskin cases. This is a new one they just put out for the iPad Air, and you can open it up. They've made them for iPads for a long time, and you've got all your stuff inside it, and you can use various, you know, stand positions. But they've just put out a new series of bags. Bags and Sleeves is their new line. And they're using artisans in various places to make them. Some of them sign their own bags. It's available on the website now. They have the messenger, the full-size bag. They're expensive, but like all their products, they're handcrafted, and they all work well together. So when you look at them, you can have your iPad in its case, your MacBook in its sleeve. It all goes into the bag. And the degree of craft that they put into
these are beautiful.
Gorgeous products.
This is the most expensive part of the show for me.
Brian and Carrie. They're a couple from Minnesota. They really care about the work they're doing. Brian and Carrie Holmes, they do fantastic stuff. They're always really excited about new products that come out because they want to make fantastic stuff to go with them. I just got their new iPhone cases, and they came with little brown paper with seals put on them. You know, hand sealed. And that's just an example of, it's the same thing Johnny and I have talked about in that video where humans like the idea that their objects they buy are cared for. We know when something's cheap and when no one really cared about making it. And we also know when someone put a lot of time and effort and love into making these things. And that's the kind of feeling I get when I look at artisanal products like this, that someone really sweated the details and made something that'll last more than a year if I buy it.
I'm ordering right now for my iPad mini. Just gorgeous.
When I travel, if I'm only taking my iPad, I put it in one of these cases and put it under my arm like a book, and just it's fantastic.
Yeah, and nobody knows you've got a expensive device. They just think you're carrying around a silly little notepad.
They know you have an expensive case. They just don't know they're expensive.
I don't know what's inside.
The idea of taking like the latest aluminum and glass technology and wrapping it in something that's as old as bookbinding and Italian leather and birch. You know, it feels like that duality is just really nice.
I love it that I have a three-letter name, so when people ask for a monogramming, I can get my name on it, see? Somebody said that's tacky to say Leo. You should have your initials, but I don't know. I like it.
Yeah.
I have a three-letter name. I'm going to take advantage of it. Hey, what do you want from me? Good pick. You're right. This is the most expensive part of the show. Man, I've just spent $100 on anything that you mentioned.
Yes.
And that's at padandquill.com.
Padandquill.com. Thank you so much, Renee Ritchie. iMore.com if you want to know more. Anything you want to plug, Renee?
Tomorrow I'm sitting down with Don Melton again, who he made WebKit for Apple and Safari for Apple, and now he's retired and he's working on H.264 transcoding of all things. So he's going to go over the various ways that you can take all your beloved videos and, you know, put them on your computer with the best quality possible.
Neat. He's an amazing guy.
Yeah. Leo, can I suck up to Renee for a minute?
Yeah, please suck up to Renee.
I just want to say, Renee, I think you're a fantastic addition to the show. I really like having you on regularly, and not just because I'm on now, but just want to say something nice to you publicly.
I agree. And so were you, Allison Sheridan.
Oh, he's blushing.
NozillaCast.com. Thank you so much. Or actually, it's Podfeet.com.
There you go.
Where you can find the Nozilla Cast. So nice
I'm
to
still
have you.
I'm still reserving judgment until I see what kind of Christmas card I get.
That's good. Is he on your blacklist or your white list?
I was about to say, you know, I haven't gotten access to you guys. You know, I'm starting to feel a little bit cheesed off about that.
Will you see the Twit Christmas card you receive? See if you could figure out which of the Twit staff was photoshopped in. I'll give you a hint. His head is 50% bigger than everybody else's.
Ozzy.
There you go. Anyway, thank you, Allison, for being here. Really appreciate it. Always good to talk to you. Let's not wait till we go to Australia again to see each other. Yeah. Thank you to Andy Iannacco, the Chicago Sun-Times. We will see him again, I bet you, next week if the snow doesn't get him.
I certainly hope so. Exactly. If the creek don't rise.
The creek don't rise. What was that phrase? The creek don't rise and the...
The something... Yeah, I don't know.
It was... what is it? Lyle Lovett or... It's a great ending of a concert.
I should never try to be folksy because I always botch it in the end. I always use those terms, and I feel like I hope I don't get caught out this time. I always get caught out. I'm just trying to be folksy and avuncular, and I'm neither of those things. I should stop trying.
If the creek don't rise, let me see here. I got it here. If the creek don't rise. I can't find it now. If the creek don't rise is the name of a song by Dan LeBlanc, but that's not what I'm thinking of. Oh, well, Dylan LeBlanc. Enough of that. Thank you, Mr. Alex Lindsay. Nice to have you here for a change.
Good
come
to
back
be here.
Soon.
I'll do the best I can.
Will you?
Yeah, I'll be in LA next week, but I'll do the best I can to come out soon.
All right.
We're going to be looking for more local producers all over the world, so definitely follow me on Twitter. Twitter and G+, those are the two places to follow me. We're going to be doing a kind of a concerted effort in December to identify more people to work with us. So if you've got spare cycles and you like video and audio and the internet,
there you go.
Follow me on Twitter and follow me on G+. We'll be sending out forms and stuff like that for people to fill out.
There you go.
Thank you.
It's if the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise. Thank you, chat room. I think that's about it for this show. If the good Lord's willing, the creek don't rise. We'll be back next Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Love it if you can watch live. If you'd like to be part of our live studio audience, and we have a good number here today, welcome to all of you. You can email tickets at twit.tv. And if you get here early, you get the comfortable chair.
Yes.
And there's only a few of those. The rest of you just going to have to.
The rest of you going to get a stool.
Well, it's not the most comfortable chairs ever.
They're not even taking the comfortable chairs. See, they had the comfy chairs in the back.
There were some in the back, and they wanted to sit up front. That's what we do. You know, you can get a comfortable chair and no view.
See, this is an audience of overachievers. You know, these are the ones that all sat in the front row. They didn't show up here. Yeah, exactly.
Man, that's amazing. Very nice to have you. You can also get. Go ahead.
Just hoping that someone's Skype feed goes out and they need, they'll be just like that kid who goes to the ballpark with a mitt and a cap saying, put me in the game.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play today. We do this show on Tuesdays. As I mentioned, if you can't watch live, though, you can always get on-demand audio and video after the fact. That's at twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer netcasts are aggregated and delivered to your device, such as iTunes. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because you know what?
Break time is over.
That's what I say.
That's what I'm saying.
It's over.
You can't be here no more.
No more.